Hello, everybody. You listen to WGN Radio. We're just switching studios, and joining me in studio is Scott Santos. It's always weird when we start without music.
I know. We should sing.
Scott is the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. And that was Frank Fontana and Kathy Hart with a great show tonight.
Very
on the
cool.
Night Side. And we're taking it over now till 1 a.m. when Nick D takes over the station as well. So I had a great lunch with you today, by the way.
We had a great lunch. We went to my club.
I didn't know that there were like clubs where nobody really knows that there's even a restaurant there.
Yeah.
It's the Old Republic building, which I also was not familiar with. What
you
a great...
You walk by it. It's got the big flags.
Everybody walks by it on Michigan Avenue.
Yeah, it's got the medallions with the guys in the, the revolutionary outfits.
I didn't notice that part.
Yeah.
I was just so focused on the fact that I was going to some secret club on the top floor.
I know, and the elevator was out. So we had to take the old way, which stops one floor below, and you have to go through a secret stairwell.
Tell folks, about this sort of, it's not secret, but it is a club you have to join. You pay quarterly.
Yeah.
And it was empty, and you said, like, with two other tables there, it was still kind of crowded.
Yeah.
But there's about 40 tables there, it looks like.
They host a lot of private events.
Okay.
It's the Skyline Club. If you want to look it up online, they have a webpage.
Yeah.
And you can look it up. And Chris is the manager. Great guy.
But you might not be able to join. And it's not that expensive.
No, but you have to fill out an application.
You have to go through a screening process.
You do.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Fancy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the stool sample is unnecessary, but they ask, so you do what you got to do.
Wow. Well, that made it weird. You made it weird. That's all right. I do the same thing sometimes.
But it's got the best view in Chicago. It's got one of the best views ever in the city.
It's gorgeous. Yeah.
It's right on Michigan Ave. It's right kind of kitty corner from the Carbon and Carbide building. And I was part of a group of guys, conservative, the dozen or so conservatives in the city. And
there's more than that.
Then they don't put their hand up. Anyway, meet there once a month for cocktails and cigars and... Because it's a private club,
I could smell that when I was when I went to go look at the area with that beautiful, almost den-like space.
Oh, big
with
chairs
the,
that you sink in and a fireplace that was actually had a fire in it.
I know. I felt like I could go be in a cabin or something.
Yeah, you just have your cocktail and your cigar and your... and you talk, the whole...
Your martini or your cognac.
Can I tell you a story, though? Because I love the place, and it really is affordable. But I took my son and his wife there, and I was trying to tell them, it really isn't that fancy. It's really not
It feels so secluded and secretive.
Well, it does, and it has that feel. As I was saying this, it's not that elite. It's not that exclusive. It's not... Before I could finish that sentence, the manager then of the place says, oh, St. Patrick's Day is coming up here. And it was a folded origami $2 bill he gave everyone to wear.
Giving out money at the restaurant.
Yeah. So my son and his wife look at me and say, not fancy. So apparently you people wear money for jewelry.
Yeah, that seems a little bit schmancy. Plus, they all knew you. The servers were bringing you your regulars. You know, they made fun of you for not ordering something different.
Yes.
The woman, the hostess,
You're
talking about your family. Right, exactly. You're talking about your families and, catching up on the kids and everything. I'm like, this is surreal. I don't have a joint like that. It's nice that you have a joint like that.
I do have a joint like that.
You know, whether it's a restaurant or a bar, someplace you walk in and everyone just knows you, knows your story, knows what you like to eat and drink.
And to say, I want to be clear, the drink for lunch was
iced tea.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Me too.
Yes.
And coffee, which I realize I doubled down on the caffeine, so I might be going to bed next Monday. It's going to be a bit.
No, a lot of times I'll be working there or having a great conversation with a friend, and they'll just keep filling up the iced tea. I forget iced tea has caffeine.
Right, and they keep coming. You start talking, and the next thing you know, it's like the magic glass of iced tea that keeps refilling itself.
You have the shakes, and it's
a little bit. Yeah. So the building is the Old Republic building, and it has it's really beautiful. I've never been in that building. You open the doors, even every door handle, was obviously just from a period that's bygone.
I'm not sure what it was before, because they have that, it's not wrought iron, it's obviously brass, but at the back that was clearly handmade for the building.
Right.
The elevators, you commented on them. They're wonky, man.
Okay, so Tom, you have to imagine this. You walk into an elevator and part of the wall of the elevator is just popped in. It looks like the wood is warped. It's pointed out into the middle of the elevator. I've never walked. It just seems like it's broken. But every single elevator is like that, and apparently it was designed that way. And Scott was saying perhaps a way to save. Have you ever been in the Old Republic building?
No, I have not.
Well,
but
you have an invitation now, Tom.
Yeah, well, go. Now I got to check out these mad elevators. It sounds pretty cool, honestly.
Actually, it looks like something my dad would have made, because my dad knew just enough to screw stuff up as a handyman. Mm-hmm. And so it looks like he just, well, we're short on wood. Just make it a 45-degree angle there.
Well, and you were telling him, yeah, just whatever it takes to make this work. We're just going to have it pop out.
It also has the voice. Have you ever been on an elevator where they have the fake British voices?
No.
Where you were on?
It's been a while. I wasn't listening to the elevator.
Because fourth floor.
Oh, I feel badly that I was ignoring the elevator. I got to pay attention.
About you later.
Don't ignore your elevator, Tom.
No, I rarely do. I rarely do.
Now, the Skyline Club, this is, you were telling me that it was all this reclaimed wood from an old pub. It's from the Sussex region of southern England.
Yes.
It was an old alehouse that was carefully dismantled and reconstructed 100 years ago at its current location.
Yeah, I swear to God, this sounds more fancy than it. It, like you said, you walk in your family. They know, we know each other. We know whose baseball teams we like. Chris is a Dodgers fan.
Mm-hmm. the building was originally the Old Republic Insurance Company, and it was purchased from Herbert Bell and renamed the Old Republic Building. It is it's an incredible building because most of downtown Chicago burned down during the fire of 1871, and this became part of the 1909 plan of Chicago. So that was one of the buildings.
I did not know that.
Thought I'd help you out with your incredible building.
It's just it's like I said, and in the summer they have a veranda that goes around half the building. And the most stunning views in the city.
Well, and now do you get inspiration? Because as we were sitting there, you were completing your task for the day, which your job is, the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, an editorial board member. And as we were sitting there, you're like, okay, what do you think? And I couldn't believe that as we were eating, you were creating the cartoon that will be consumed by millions of people.
Yes, it was
consumed. Makes it sound a little aggressive, but.
No, let's say consumed.
Okay.
Absorbed.
Absorbed?
No, that's not right.
Yeah, that seems like.
It's got to be a word.
Mm,
anyway, yeah, so no. Oh, it was great. And how cool is it for me to have a resource like you across the table to say, what do you think of this?
It was surreal.
Yeah. And you were saying,
it was a lot of pressure.
No, it wasn't. No,
it was.
No.
Yes.
You collaborated with smarter people. So
Not that much smarter.
Okay.
Not at all smarter. You're very smart.
So we're going, so what did you think of this? And you're going, oh, that, try this and try that. What do you think of this word? What do you think about that? What do you think about this? And so actually the cartoon we came up with wasn't the one that actually ran. So
what? Oh, is there another one?
Yeah.
Oh, there's a third one?
No. Were you there for the Trump cartoon then?
That was the one, right.
Okay, so that's the one.
It's funny because you start out obviously with black and white, and then you share these with folks that are on your mailing list.
Yeah.
So we can see the different cells of where it starts, then how you do the shading.
Well, actually, that's because some papers run it in black and white and some run it in color.
All right.
And if you run a color cartoon in black and white, it can be okay, but it's just okay.
Right. It looks great, and I love the elements, like watching it sort of evolve from what I saw across the lunch table to what it is in the Chicago Tribune.
Yeah, it's always. And you saw the furrowed brow. You saw the deadline's coming.
What is your deadline? Do you have? Is it?
Oh, guess what?
What?
I just.
Do you have to leave?
No. No, I just.
Time's up.
I just learned as I sent this in that my deadlines have been moved up yet another hour.
Oh. So you were late today.
Well, I was berated for being late when I had no knowledge of being late. I guess.
Oh, you didn't know.
No knowledge of deadlines is no excuse, I guess. But I wasn't in the. I was literally not in the meeting when they mentioned this. So just throwing it out there.
So ignorance is not an excuse, I guess.
Apparently not.
Wow. Okay.
So now my deadline is 1 o'clock for the rough and 3 o'clock for the finished cartoon.
For the finished. And you weren't able to join us for the Mincing Rascals. How will that be for you on Thursdays? Because every Thursday, John Williams, his podcast, records right here.
I'm sorry, I'm looking at the TV. That look like, does Ted Cruz have a beard now?
Yes, he does. He's getting a little scruffy. He's got his winter beard. Yeah. There's nothing.
He's from
it.
Texas. What kind of winter can they have there?
I don't know. I'm just, you know.
I'm sorry. I was just like, I was looking. I just kind of meandered over the TV. I go,
do I, you want me to turn the screen away from you?
Would you mind? Because the ADD is just kicking in big time.
Well, as I was saying, we missed you today at the Mincing Rascals.
Well, that was a doctor's appointment. Yes. So that was that was something different. And I'm fine, by the way.
All right. Well, I'm glad to hear that. We're going to check in with one of the actors who is performing the national touring company that is doing the Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical. We're going to check in with him in just a moment and learn about his career
awesome.
And this production that's in Chicago right now through the week. More in a moment. It's the Patty Vasquez Show. We're hanging out with Scott Stantis, and it is Theater Thursday. So let's go on. Let's see what's going on stage.
There's no people like show people.
It is Theater Thursday, and we are excited to learn about the latest production of The Lightning Thief, up the Percy Jackson musical. And this, now, I've never read this one. I have teenage boys who I feel badly now that I didn't share with. Although there's time, Scott Stantis, are you familiar with Percy Jackson?
I'm not.
Well, he is the son of Poseidon, and we have one of the actors who is in the national touring company for this production. Jarell Javier joins us on the line. Hey, Jarell, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing so well. How are you guys?
We're very good. And congratulations on this. This is your first national tour?
It is.
This is exciting.
I just graduated college in May, moved to the city 3 months ago, and now I'm here.
Oh, you moved here? Okay, I have to ask. Where did you grow up, Terrell?
I was born in the Philippines. I was there till I was six. And then I moved to Southern California, where I was there from the time that I was six up until I was, you know, shipped off to college. So I grew up in Southern California in Torrance.
Okay, Scott just got very excited because I suspect that he is familiar with the area.
Yeah, I'm actually from Pedro, dude.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I love San Pedro.
And he's wearing a shirt that says Redondo Beach Wharf Rats, the South Carolina Trolley League.
Southern California,
yes.
Trolley League.
Sorry, I apologize. Yeah.
Nice. So
he's wearing his California pride. Now I have to ask you, as I ask many people who moved to Chicago from places that are a little more temperate, what brought you to Chicago?
Oh, I meant that I moved to the city as in New York City, not Chicago. So I moved to New York City.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I gotcha. So you moved to New York, and of course now traveling with The Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical. Of course we understand why you would move. I mean, I always think that people would move here for the theater too, but New York is kind of that's the pie in the sky, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was just always a dream of mine. And so once I had graduated and I had my parents' blessing, I made the leap and have been there, you know, for the past 3.5 months before leaving.
So this was pretty quick for you to move to New York and then land a national tour. How did that feel?
It's incredible. I was a massive fan of the book. So for me to come full circle from reading the books as a sixth grader to landing the national tour as my first big, you know, job after college, it was a complete full circle for me, and I've just been so grateful for the opportunity and the people that are so sweet to me and the fans and all that stuff. So
I'm so excited to hear, you know, a young man like yourself who, you know, sets out to accomplish something and to be so successful so quickly. For those who are not familiar with The Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical, because I did not know about this. Now, this sounds amazing. Percy Jackson is a teenager who newly discovers that he is a demigod and goes on an epic quest to find Zeus. Zeus's missing lightning bolt and prevent a war between the Greek gods, which sounds like quite the adventure. Tell me about your role, Grover, Jarell.
Right. So my role, Grover, is the best friend. So Grover is a satyr, and satyrs are protectors of half-bloods. So I go to school with Percy. I am his best friend. And once he finds out that he's a demigod, we bring him back to Camp Half-Blood, in which then all of the adventure begins, right? And then after that, we go on this epic quest, like you said, to find Zeus's missing bolt. And I am at his right-hand side the entire time. So anything that happens to him is basically also happening to my character.
So that's a lot going on. And you just got off stage about a half an hour ago. How has this week been? You premiered last night. How has it gone so far? Two performances in. How does it feel?
It's feeling so, so good. I mean, the energy from the audience has just been so incredible. And to know that I'm performing in a show that has so much love and so much passion behind it, both on stage, off stage, behind the table, and in the audience, is an incredible feeling. And to be given the platform that I am to kind of just relay that message of love and strength and individuality is also just something that is so important to me.
Well, and I also, I was reading some of the reviews, and one of the reviewers was saying that this show just bursts with love from the cast. And what a great way to describe the energy you guys bring to the stage. How does that feel?
It's been just incredible. You know, jumping into a new cast, it was very, very, I was a little scared because, you know, my predecessor was this incredible actor who was very beloved and everyone knows him. And the cast had four of its original members, and so I was scared that I was going to feel alienated or left out, but they have been nothing but kind and supportive and loving. They welcomed me with open arms, and it's just, it really is a family, as cheesy as it sounds. So it's been lovely.
What was the rehearsal process like, from casting to getting it on the road? How long does that take?
So we rehearsed for approximately 3 weeks. We were in a rehearsal studio in New York City for 3 weeks, and then we flew out to Fayetteville, Arkansas to do our tech and do some previews. So we had about a week and a half in Fayetteville, and then we flew here to Chicago to open. So all in all, we started rehearsal early December, okay. I believe. We started rehearsal early December, and then just kind of like was shot out of a cannon, and now we're open.
And this is an interesting time to come into Chicago. How has the weather been treating you?
Oh man, it's so cold.
I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
It is so cold. Yeah, and I'm from Southern California, so 50 degrees to me is chilly, and like 50 degrees here is like warm, you know.
I can't. Well, yeah, this is where it feels personal, doesn't it? And you have to take care of yourself. Yeah.
Yeah, and the wind is, I mean, look, I know that it's called the Windy City, but wow, I was getting pushed by the wind walking down the street.
Yeah.
It was intense. Yeah.
It can be, yeah, like I said, it can feel personal. Have you had a chance to explore the city a little bit?
A little bit. I've been just kind of resting up because I've been very tired, and I had some friends come in for opening, so we would go out to eat and stuff. But I have a couple more days in the city, so I think that during the day I'm going to start exploring a little bit more now that we're open.
And you're only running now. We're talking to Jarell Javier. He plays Grover in The Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical, which is playing at the Oriental Theater. It's running through January 13th, and you can go to BroadwayInChicago.com for ticket information. They also have a digital lottery going on, so you can log in there and click for details where you're prompted. And this is, an award-winning adaptation of this production. And I have to ask, when you're, when you bring all that, energy to the stage, it must be the kind of thing where, does it take you a while to come down after the show? Or are you on a schedule where you go to bed? Oh, it does? Okay.
No, it does. It takes me a while to get them after the show, after all that adrenaline and so much energy to kind of reach the peak of the show and to have it come down. It takes a couple minutes, couple hours. But the cast and I do love to hang out in each other's rooms. We all have our onesies and we watch movies and play board games and card games. So that kind of helps. Calm us down. Yeah.
Okay, Jarell, I just have to tell you that Scott and I just got super jealous.
Yeah, that sounds so adorable. We almost never do that in the newspaper business.
So what movies are you guys watching this week? What has been some of the, are you watching any of the like the Golden Globe nominated, or are you watching some older stuff?
This week, I think the most recent one we watched was The Favorite, because some of our cast members, really wanted to watch it. But recently, we've been really addicted to this card game called Coup. And so every night we would just try, Coup, COUP. And it's this card game. We're all really enamored by it. And we play it almost every night, if not more often,
Well, and so let me go back to The Favorite, because that's the most recent one you said you watched. What did you think about that movie? Because it's an interesting film.
It is. I thought it was so interesting. I don't really know my full opinions about it just yet, simply because I didn't really get it the first time I watched it. But I want to do a little bit of research and then rewatch it again with that in mind, simply because I'm a very analytical person and I like to delve deeper than just a one-time watch thing. But I thought it was really well done. I thought the cinematography was wonderful.
Yes.
The acting was great. The script was incredibly, incredibly insightful. And there were moments of just humor that I really, really appreciated. So, I mean, I thought it was a great film overall, but I do want to, do more research about it.
The costuming it's going to win the Academy Award for that. It's just sumptuous and beautiful. And historically, Queen Anne, I'm not sure how close they got, but I think just the idea of how courts work and how people, how the politics of a court kind of the meandering back and forth. That's I think they got that really, really right.
Tom seemed very excited about it as well. Tom, our producer, yes?
You know, I didn't know that I wanted a mashup of Mean Girls and, you know, English history. And then I got it, and I was like, this is everything to me.
It was the movie you didn't know you needed.
Oh, God. It's spectacular. Rachel Weisz. You've got Olivia Colman, Emma Stone, and it's just it's one of those movies that I think later down the road people are going to be like, this was a moment for everybody.
I think my favorite.
It's so good.
Well, Jarrell, you were talking about the costume. You guys were talking about the costumes. I love Rachel Weisz's the costume that she shoots the does the shooting target practice in. That's my favorite one.
Yeah. It's absolutely gorgeous. Yeah, the costuming in that show is phenomenal.
Yeah, that's amazing. We were talking to Jarrell Javier. He is on stage this week through the 13th in the production of The Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical, running through the 13th, like I just said, and it's playing at the Oriental Theater. Go to BroadwayInChicago.com for ticket information. Jarrell, I'm going to keep you for one more segment. Tell them they have to hold on with the movies and the card game until we have one more segment with you, okay?
Okay.
All right, we're going to hang out through the news. More in a moment, this quick break, and then the news on 720 WGN. The Greek gods are real, and they're ruining Percy Jackson's life. He's the son of Poseidon. Percy has newly discovered powers he can't control, monsters on his trail, and he's on an epic quest to find Zeus's lightning bolt to prevent a war between the gods. That's a lot going on in one play. That's the Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical, running through January 13th at the Oriental Theater. And on the line with us is one of the stars of this production, Jarrell Javier. In studio with me is Scott Stantis, the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune.
Hello there.
You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show, 720 WGN. And Jarrell, I was just we were talking off the air, and we were wondering, do you have some plans on what you're going to do as far as exploring Chicago? Because I know our listeners can probably give you some suggestions.
I actually don't have any plans as of this moment. I mean, I obviously want to see the Bean because it's the Bean. But I'm such a huge foodie, so if anyone has any recommendations for food, that's where I want to be.
Now, I know that people will say, you know, to taste Chicago, a lot of times they'll say hot dogs or deep dish pizza.
Right.
Chicago has such an eclectic landscape of wonderful food.
Yeah, well, in fact, and just great bars. Do you drink alcohol?
Oh, come on now. He's got to protect his voice.
I do sometimes, but I try not to, like, you know, preserve my voice.
Yep.
Oh, okay. You were right.
I know. He's got those vocal cords have to be strong. You don't want drying them out during a run like this. It's cold out.
All right, but if you want to go to a great bar and a restaurant, frankly.
Okay, well, now I want to know.
Well, you know what I'm going to say.
What are you going to say?
Club Lago.
Oh, Club Lago.
That's probably my favorite. It's like so Chicago.
Yeah, Javier, it's like the, Jarrell, it's like this like neighborhood joint. It's like, you know, your real Italian, just, you know, big booths and the owners.
Brothers, Guido and Giancarlo, they're Italian.
Yes. Ooh, that sounds great. Yeah.
Yeah, I recommend, you know, taking a look. I mean, you can always Google, especially like wherever you are. It's always fun to explore. And I think Chicagoans are pretty good about sharing their opinions.
Where would you go for, like, what's your favorite
food?
That's
a lot of
God,
lot
there's
of
everything.
Pressure. Down here, it's hard because exactly. I hate to pick one in particular, but I do, I love, in my neighborhood, I love the Gale Street Inn. So that's one of my favorite places. So I'll think for a moment.
Ooh, okay.
They got good ribs. And I also, ooh. I was learning more about you, Jarrell. Well, first, I think we were curious about your name. Is that a family name, Jarrell? Because the first thing that comes to a lot of people's mind, of course, is Superman.
Yeah, my parents were nerds. They did name me after Superman's father.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everyone in the studio just got very excited.
Yeah, they just took out the dash and added an extra R and then called it a day.
Well, and it's a very, it's iconic. It's also a very powerful name. And I was watching your TEDx presentation, and people can check this out on YouTube. Search for Jarrell Javier. It's really beautiful. It's about, it's a purple in a world of reds and blues. And I have to thank you so much for being so honest and so authentic in this presentation. Tell us a little bit about what inspired you to talk about growing up in a household where your father perhaps expected you to be fulfilling a masculine image he had of you.
Right. So the theme of the TEDx conference was to bridge differences. And when I was told that I was going to be selected to be a featured speaker, I kind of had to dig deep and know that this was going to be a platform that I can use to speak something that was really, really, truly close to my heart. My father has always been the kindest and just most loving man. However, he is a little bit traditional in that he grew up in the Philippines. And so growing up, there were certain gender roles that I guess were a little bit more expected of me. And so I essentially wrote about the way that I had to bridge the difference between what the traditional idea of what masculinity means as to what I myself will feel as what I feel is the ideal masculinity, whatever that means, right?
Well, the ideal Jarrell, I think, is what, you know, you were exploring.
Yeah. It's very that. And it was a very lengthy process. It took about 3 months of drafting and redrafting. But in the end, it was a very, very wonderful experience. And I'm very, very proud of the feedback that I've gotten from people who have seen it.
It is, as I mentioned, it's beautiful. And I think a lot of people identify with your idea that you made your notebook your den. You know, you found permission to be anything. And you're also a poet, is that right? A spoken word poet?
Yes, yep. I am. Uh-huh.
And when did you start exploring that part of yourself?
Yeah, so when I was in middle school, my sister was in high school at the time, and they had a school competition for slam poetry. And that was my first introduction to the world of slam poetry. My sister was the one who brought me into that world, and I just kind of fell in love with it. I love that it was poetry that was meant to be heard and not just necessarily read, that there was another element of performance and rhythm and just performance that was in the words, and I just kind of fell in love with that world.
And when did you begin, you know, showing, or were you always interested in theater? Was that something that you kind of grew up knowing that you wanted to pursue?
Not always, actually. I was first introduced to it in middle school. Again, kind of everything kind of happened in middle school for me. And it was one of those things where a teacher came up to me and told me, hey, you kind of have potential. Let's try to explore this side of the world. And for me, I didn't really think that it was going to pan out. But obviously, I kind of got bit with a theater bug, and the rest was history from there.
And for anyone who's just catching up on the conversation, Jarrell moved to New York a little over 3.5 months ago and is now part of the national tour for The Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical. And it's really remarkable. Is your family excited for you?
Oh, they're so stoked. They're so excited. They're going to come see the show when we're up in San Jose. They're going to drive up there. We're I'm super excited for them to see the show.
How many weeks are scheduled out for this production?
As of right now, our last show is in the middle of July. It is from now until the middle of July. Yeah.
So you'll be living on the road for the next 7 months, 6 months.
Yeah. It's definitely different than being in one stationary place, but you know, I'm young, I love adventure, and I'm really excited to see the country and eat at all the different places. So I think it's going to be a great time.
What's jumping out as one of the next places that you're excited to see? And we don't have to say the ones that you're not excited to see. We don't want to make anyone feel singled out.
No, we have a stop in Toronto, and I'm really excited to visit Canada because I want authentic poutine.
Yes.
And so I'm very, very, very excited about that stop.
Well, that leads me to believe that you have tried inauthentic poutine.
Yeah, it was very questionable.
Oh, no. No one should eat questionable poutine.
No, not in America.
And for those who aren't familiar, it's French fries with a lot of toppings. Like, it could be gravy,
cheese,
and shredded
meat.
Pork, right?
Yeah.
Cheese curds, yeah.
Gerald's like, yeah, cheese curds.
They have some great poutine at the Green Door Tavern.
Oh, there you go. It may not be the Canadian, you know. I would certainly explore poutine in Chicago. I think there's some pretty top-notch restaurants that have decent, if not more, maybe not the authentic, but not the inauthentic. How's that? Somewhere in the middle.
That sounds wonderful. I'm sure I'll love it. Yeah, I'll explore a little bit of that in here.
The Caraman has it, so if you want Irish poutine, it's just a lot of whiskey.
A lot of whiskey?
No, I'm kidding.
I was going to say. Now, we're trying to protect his vocal cords.
Okay, sorry.
What are some of the things that you do, Jarrell? Because I know that, I mean, that's your instrument, is to protect your voice.
Yeah, it is. I drink a lot of water every day. I carry a gallon with me.
A whole gallon?
I go through maybe, yeah, a whole gallon. I actually go through about a half a gallon per show just because I sweat so much. So I will drink anywhere from a half to an entire gallon just in one show. So if we're doing two show days, I'm constantly trying to hydrate and just replenish what I'm losing on stage. I also steam a lot. I have like a personal steamer, which is really good for your vocal cords because the haze is a little dehydrating. So I try to replenish that moisture in there.
And you know what? That's good advice for anybody, especially because, you know, during the cold months, you know, the heat is on, you get dried out. If you have an opportunity to, you know, run a little bit of steam and drinking water, that's good advice for everybody. Jarrell, see, you're helping everybody.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Well, I am thrilled for you, Jarrell. It's been a pleasure to hang out with you, and I encourage everyone to visit BroadwayInChicago.com. The show is The Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical, running at the Oriental Theater through January 13th. Jarrell Javier plays Grover and Mr. D. Is that right? You have two parts in this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to diminish the fact that you're running two parts, and that's why you're sweating so much on stage. And again, I want to congratulate you on such a wonderful opportunity and your success so far.
Thank you so much. That means so much to me.
I look forward to talking to you again. I know there's going to be so much more. Be well, Jarrell.
You too. Have a good night.
Good night. Now go play Coup.
I will.
Awesome.
Bye.
Bye, Jarrell. More after this on the Patty Vasquez Show, 720 WGN. You're listening to WGN Radio, 720 AM. It's the Patty Vasquez Show, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Joining me is Scott Stantis, the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and member of the editorial board. And you apparently missed some goings-on at the Tribune this morning because you had a doctor's appointment.
I did. I missed Governor Rauner.
Outgoing Governor Rauner.
Yeah.
And he stopped by to say thank you.
Yeah.
To the Tribune
and
do a debriefing, I guess.
That was it. And I got debriefed on the debriefing. So he was gracious and seemed very relaxed.
Well, I think once, you know, all is said and done, you know, I'm sure that there'll be a lot to talk about for you know, years to come. And it'll be interesting to see what happens next in Springfield, which, you know, the 101st General Assembly was just inaugurated. Was that just on Tuesday, Representative Martwick?
No, it was Wednesday. It was Wednesday. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah. It's the beginning of my fourth term, so I'm pretty excited.
Anything dramatic happen? I know last time I was there a couple years ago on the 100th inauguration, Scott Drury was a no vote.
It's not a no vote. It's a
present.
Present. Yeah. It's not a yes or a no for inauguration. On the speaker. It's Madigan or Durkin. So you're choosing one of the two candidates, and so. No Democrat would. I mean, it's not. I guess it's not inconceivable, but typically you wouldn't vote for the Republican for Speaker, but you vote present to not vote for me.
Does somebody nominate a Republican for the Speaker?
Yes.
Who was nominated?
Jim Durkin was nominated.
Okay.
So the process is, you know, it's already decided, right? It's decided along the lines of the number of representatives each party has, and the Democratic Party has 74, which is as someone said, it's not a supermajority, it's a super duper majority.
Oh boy!
and so it was inevitable that the Democratic nominee would be the speaker. And so the way the process is played, it's very ceremonial. There are four nomination speeches for the party that is going to control the chamber. So there are four speeches to nominate Madigan, one speech to nominate, and then 3 seconds, as it were, or a second, third, and a fourth. And then there's a nomination speech for the Republican candidate, which was Jim Durkin, and then two more speeches seconding that nomination, and then there's a vote which goes along party lines.
Wow. Now, Scott, you still have not been to Springfield.
No.
I knew he was going to make that.
That was almost a spit take.
Yeah, it was a little bit. He has never been to Springfield. Tom Hush? Have you been to Springfield?
Nope. No visits to Springfield.
Seriously?
I've been wanting to do a field trip with listeners for a while, but...
Well, I mean, are we talking Missouri, Springfield, Missouri, Springfield, Illinois,
the capital of this great state.
You know, it's a great town. Everyone should go visit. First of all, it's the seat of government, and really, I know, of course, the city is getting a lot of attention right now, but the city can do nothing if they don't have partnership with the state, and the city is so dependent upon what goes on in the state government.
Yes.
Maybe there are people who will be mad at me when I say this, but the state government, I think, is the most important government that touches your daily life. It really does. I mean, the city, for daily life, it's there's no doubt there's crime control and street sides, walks, and alleys. But most of what affects your daily life, how much money you get, what sort of services are being provided, how the state's being run, economic development, and all of that, really is so much more goes on at the state level. I think everyone should go visit. And plus, it's a good town.
There's
great history, all of the Lincoln stuff that goes on there.
You can eat a horseshoe. You know, our last guest was talking about poutine. It's kind of like the Midwestern version of poutine.
A horseshoe. It is the native dish of Springfield, Illinois. Mm-hmm. And it's two pieces of
toast. Now you guys are just making stuff up.
We are not.
No, it's great. The horseshoe's awesome.
Here, listen. Go ahead. Texas toast.
Yeah. Two slices of Texas toast. The meat of your choice, although the classic is hamburger patties, mm-hmm. right? So two hamburger patties. Then they put French fries all over it, and then they drown it in neon yellow cheese sauce.
Okay, well, that I can live for.
Yeah, well, and there's that little like house. I finally went to that one. I can't remember the name. It's like the oldest one in Springfield. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's like a little white house
made
with
right.
the green. Made Right. I went to Made Right.
Do you know what the Made Right is? It's like a sloppy Joe without the sauce. It's like a loose meat sandwich or whatever. And so it's one of the original Made Rights in the country.
Tom, are they making this stuff up?
We are not.
Well, when they were talking about eating horseshoes, I was like, I know downstate Illinois is pretty rural, but come on, eating horseshoes.
That's poor people food sometimes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Can I give a little plug for a place? Or just tell you that it exists. There's a place called the Cozy Drive-In.
Yes.
Which is the home of the original corn dogs.
Corn dogs.
Oh, yep. Well.
Where it was invented.
So it's history.
This is a history tour.
On Route 66. I mean, it's
Lincoln and corn dogs.
That's right.
It doesn't get any better than that. Although the Lincoln home is not open right now due to the government shutdown.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Yes, because it's federal government. Yeah.
So unfortunately, you cannot visit Lincoln's home. We have to get you down to Springfield.
I need to go. I keep asking.
Now, you drew Michael Madigan the other day. How many is 42 years he's been?
I think since the Andrew Jackson administration.
There you go.
I'm pretty sure.
Well, he is the longest serving Speaker of the House of any state legislature in the history of the country.
Since 83, except for 2 years when the Republicans somehow snuck in. And
that's correct.
And, of course, a lot of people have their thoughts on whether or not he needs to get out and how, you know, and he does have a lot of power. And now with a Democrat in the governor's office,
all the constitutional offices.
Right. And a super duper majority.
Yeah.
In both chambers?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Well, now here's what it is. You got it.
That's right.
You guys got it.
Gotta own it.
Now you gotta own it.
Mm-hmm.
And now what? Whether it's pensions, whether it's the healthcare in the state of Illinois, we've got, you know, a lot of things that we, well, how far in the hole are we still from the budget impasse? 12 billion?
I mean, it's a moving target, but it is quite a bit. Yes, it is in
the super duper bit.
Super duper bit, yes. You know, we did things like, they bonded some of the of the backlog of bills to get to a lower interest rate. So they're like, so they reduced the backlog of bills like, well, you still owe the bonds, so you still have debt, right? No matter how you slice it, we have massive, massive debts, and we have massive problems that need to be addressed. What I would say is that this last election, especially the governor's election, could not have been more clear. Typically, candidates start out way left or way right to win their primary, and then they move back to the center, and that didn't happen. I mean, J.B. Pritzker started out left and he stayed left. And he said right through the campaign, I'm gonna push through a progressive income tax, which I was happy to hear since I wrote a bill on that 2 years ago. And he said that he was going to take this very progressive way to solve our problems. And the people of the state of Illinois said, by a margin greater than any gubernatorial race in the history of the state of Illinois, yep, that's what we want.
It's going to be interesting. Like I said, the Democrats own it now, and it's everything. It's the city of Chicago. The next mayor will be a Democrat. The General Assembly, as you said, all the constitutional offices. Mm-hmm. How are you feeling, Scott?
Marginalized. No, I mean, hey, listen, the Republican Party of Illinois screwed up. They and quite frankly, they had an extremely weak candidate on the top of the ticket. There's no question about that. And that's one of the reasons why J.B. Pritzker didn't have to move to the center, because there's no reason to. There's no leverage to.
I agree with you, Scott.
I mean, I would challenge you today, and I'm sorry I didn't get to sit in with the governor today, but I would challenge you that what the hell was he running on?
Well, and I'm curious what you think about the recent news stories that he was looking to get off the ticket and get replaced.
Oh, that was wild.
I've heard from various sources that's true. That he was trying to ask anyone else to run.
In the middle of the election, for those who aren't aware, after the primary, after, you know, Pritzker was clearly going to be the candidate, this was well into the campaigning, in the summer, wasn't it, August?
I heard it was before the primary, but that...
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Okay. I heard it was after. I heard it was after, like, in August. But either way...
Regardless, it's still weird that an incumbent governor, or any incumbent, would just bail somebody else to run, and you could tell when he ran, he didn't. You have to want this so much it hurts. You know, that's how you run for office. I mean, and that's not a bad thing.
Right.
I mean, it truly isn't. But you have to have that desire, and he just and that hurt all the candidates down ticket. There was a very strong attorney general candidate on the Republican side. I thought had a chance. She didn't, apparently.
No.
And again, they lost. I mean. They actually were starting to erode that super. They got rid of the supermajority, the Republican Party, and then all of a sudden, all of those gains are gone, mm-hmm. just vanished.
Yeah, it was a crazy year.
And what do you think about the, you know, as Andrea Darlis was reporting the mayoral forum today, I think she read off about 13 candidates.
Yeah, 12 or 13.
And altogether, are there now 15?
Yeah, now they've contested the petitions.
And we're only about 5 weeks out from the primary. I mean, not the primary, because it is the general election, but no one's going to get 51%.
Yeah, it's technically a primary. It'll whittle down. No, I can't imagine a scenario where anyone gets 50 plus one.
Well, who are the two left then? I mean, I was so proud of myself. I'm like, it's Preckwinkle. It's going to be Preckwinkle. Wait, she's friends with who?
Well, and Susana Mendoza has, I mean, like, there are very few.
She has a Burke problem, too, and yeah.
Burke problem, yeah. I don't know if, who knew? Yeah.
I don't know how much that will. I mean, I think it will definitely affect the numbers, but I don't know if it's enough to take a front runner out of contention.
Well, Tony's not that far in front, and the thing is, she also had the Berrios issue beforehand. She endorsed him and stood by him, and he lost. And now the Burke thing, where you know, clearly they were in cahoots, you know, I think that does hurt. It's not, you know, does it crush the campaign? It doesn't.
No, I think, you know, at least in my experience, voters tend to, I'm not saying it doesn't affect it, but voters tend to judge the candidate not based on their associations, but based on their body of work. You know what I mean? So it's like endorsements. You know, people, I'm endorsed by so-and-so and so. Voters don't really care that. They don't care about that. They want to know who you are and what you've done and what you're going to do. And so I think that that's going to be the most important thing. There's no doubt that Burke will create a little bit of a cloud. But again, I don't think it's enough to reshuffle the deck.
So what's your guess? I mean, if you had to guess today, and there's still a lot of campaigning.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to even put your finger on it.
Yeah, it's hard because you if you break it by 15 ways, and again, you know, a lot of these candidates, Dorothy Brown, I heard, is going to get bounced, right? Like it's...
Oh, is she?
Yeah. So she's like 1,100 signatures under what's necessary right now, so...
And under investigation.
Well, she's been under investigation for 8 years.
I mean, that's some chutzpah, as they would say.
Yeah. Well,
some words, but sure.
No, I guess my gut feeling is that Preckwinkle will be in the runoff. The question is really who the other candidate is, and it looks like it's Susana Mendoza right now.
Yeah,
you know, I don't see Bill Daley getting a lot of coverage because he keeps coming up with these crazy policy ideas, and he seems to be getting a lot of coverage because people are like, "What is that?"
Well, and he's raised over $3 million.
Oh, yeah.
That's a lot of money. Let's take a quick break here. In a moment, we're going to hear the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medical Newsroom on 720 WGN. The 101st General Assembly was inaugurated yesterday, Wednesday, down in Springfield. And next week, the new governor of Illinois, Governor Pritzker, will take office as well. Inauguration coming up next week. A lot of festivities. I know a lot of people are going down there, and including Representative Robert Martwick, who was just inaugurated yesterday, and not Scott Santis, the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and member of the editorial board.
Apparently, they're never sent me.
I know. They should send you just to get a feel for it. Have you? Are there other state capitals you've, like, when you lived in Madison? Because right there in the middle of the city.
I haunted that capital. I wanted to work there.
Our capital's better. Don't you think? Our capital's better. Theirs is a little bit darker. Have you been to the Madison Capitol? It's nice.
Yeah, it's pretty. And you know, Madison's a nice town, no doubt about it. But if you, Scott, our Capitol building is... It is unbelievable. It is truly worth a stop to see. It is one of the most beautiful Capitol buildings.
Do you have rodents? Madison has rodents.
No.
No. It is spectacular.
I've spent many
Madison has the big statue of the rodent.
Oh, the badgers. Oh, I see. Yeah. No. There's a lot of great artwork in the hallways of the Capitol. There are a lot, obviously, the statues of historic figures, governors, and legislators throughout the history. You know, a lot of Stephen Douglas and Abraham Lincoln. A lot of history there. It's a beautiful Capitol.
And to be fair, Illinois has financial problems, and so everything that you spend money on gets questioned. And obviously, they spent some money restoring that building, but I think that money was so well spent, because you could never pay to replicate that building, never. So the restoration of it and the preservation of it has been just nothing short of magnificent, and it's a gem. People should go see it. It's great.
And before they left office, the Rauners also remodeled and redecorated the governor's mansion.
They did. Yes, I haven't been there since it's been redone, but I look forward to seeing it. Yeah.
Is Governor-elect Pritzker going to live there? Has he said?
I think he is. I don't know.
Yeah, he's
going to split his time, I would think.
Yeah, he said he'll be going back and forth. But
tell him not to touch the toilets.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Now you have to make me look for sound effects on that.
That's such a... As a cartoonist and as an 11-year-old boy inside my old body, that just makes me giggle.
So I just out of curiosity, when you see, as a cartoonist, I mean, obviously, Madigan and Rauner made great subjects, right? I mean, do you see that with JB? Like, I'll have fun with this. I mean, he's a bit of a caricature himself in the way, just in his own persona.
And he knows it. I mean, and when he launched his campaign, he talked about his weight. He seems to have a great sense of humor. He actually came in for a super secret editorial board meeting. And
super secret.
And because he didn't come in for the endorsement meetings. He knew that we weren't going to endorse him. And I think there's maybe some hard feelings, maybe not. But he impressed the hell out of us. And this was after the election. But he's walking out. He's introduced myself. He says, "Oh, I'm going to have to go on a diet just so that you draw me so fat." And as he's walking, I said, "Don't do it."
Oh, no.
JB, please.
But it's self-deprecating. That's sweet.
No, it was very sweet. Yeah. I like that. So, yeah, it's going to see how his administration goes. You know, I'm going to give him a chance for at least an hour or two. Now, he's being sworn on Sunday. Is that correct?
On Monday.
312-981-7200 to, of course, join our conversation anytime. You can call or text us to that number, 312-981-7200. I know there are a lot of issues that are important to people in the state of Illinois, and actually what happens in Illinois affects the states around us as well as what happens, you know, whether it's in Iowa or, you know, Indiana, Wisconsin affects us. What are some of the big things that you're hoping to accomplish as we head into the spring?
Well, again, the people of Illinois said that they want to go in a certain direction, and to me, you know, the stuff that I'll be working on, the progressive income tax was talked about a lot throughout the campaign. I filed a progressive income tax bill in February of 2016, started working on it very early, and it was interesting. I'll tell you a little story. When I was down in Springfield, there's a freshman orientation for the new members, and there are a lot of new members this time around. Dispelling the notion that we actually need term limits. We do not. That we've got a 30% changeover in the House in 1 year. But I met a downstate Republican who had just won and was new. And so we were at an event, and I introduced myself. I said, "Well, hi, I'm Rob Martwick." And he said, "Martwick?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Oh, my God, it's so good to meet you." And I said,
"Okay.
Really? Why?" Right? And he goes, because I talked about you my whole campaign. You're the guy with the progressive income tax. My whole campaign was campaigning against you. And
that's outstanding.
I know, it was great. And it really was, it was a moment of pride, right? Like I shouldn't say never, but I try never to take this stuff personally. We all come to the table with ideas for solutions. I've laid mine out. I think that this is a good way forward. I'm not the only one. And obviously, the people of the state of Illinois said, yeah, let's give that a chance. So I look forward to, I'll be carrying the Progressive Income Tax Initiative in the House of Representatives, and I'm busy crafting that bill right now. I'll also be chairing pensions again, and I really believe that everything in this state, I don't care what the problem is, if it's a social problem, if it's a justice problem, if it's an economic problem, I can show you how our inability to handle our pension system has caused that problem. And so I really believe that the fix that we will get in Illinois in the next 4 years will be tied to changing that tax structure in conjunction with fixing the pensions. And so I'll be happy to be weighing
in. Are we talking about fixing the state constitution as well?
Scott, that's been a big push for that. I'm not a fan of that as
really?
Yeah, I'm really not. So for a number of reasons, I don't think it would work. And the other thing, too, I said this to someone just today or yesterday. I really think that one of the biggest mistakes we've made in Illinois is that we have been so obsessed with the easy fix. Everything is going to be a silver bullet that solves all of our problems.
I agree.
Right? And we get it, and everyone gets so consumed with pursuing one thing that's going to solve all of our problems, and that's not the answer. The answer is we need to really dig into the weeds and do the things that are going to nibble around the edges of this big problem. And the solution to the pensions is financial. It's financial and mathematical. We're not going to get out of that problem by avoiding paying it. I really don't believe that. I know that some people do, but what I've said to people that have pushed this agenda is that if you pass a constitutional amendment, it is going to be interpreted by the same Supreme Court that said you cannot diminish benefits. And I just don't believe that if you pass that amendment, that they are going to allow you to retroactively apply it and take away benefits that have already been promised.
Well, I don't think it's retroactively. I think it's moving forward. But the fact is, as you mentioned, the Supreme Court has used this as leverage to put the kibosh on virtually every
right
pension reform plan put forward by Democrats, Republicans. So it seems that unless you fix that problem, it's going to be an incredibly difficult problem to fix.
Well, and remember, we've really fixed it going forward, right? So in 2010, we adopted Tier 2 pension legislation, which has some of the most austere pension benefits of any public sector pension in the country. Tier 2 is very austere. In fact, it's so austere, we may have problems of its own. There's your pension benefits when you don't give your employees, when they don't participate in Social Security, you have to meet a minimum test, and there's concerns we won't meet that test. So we have fixed the problem going forward. Tier 2, every employee hired after January 1st, 2011, the taxpayer cost for providing their pension is zero because their contribution covers all of their benefits. So, what we have is not what we owe or what we're giving in pensions. It's what we owe to the old system. And so that's a debt problem. And I just don't see the Supreme Court interpreting a change, allowing you to go back and take away benefits to people that have already retired. I just don't see it.
Well, and that was something that Mayor Emanuel had wanted to, was retroactively kind of cut back on benefits that were already promised.
Well, pretty much everyone has. I mean, the General Assembly tried to do it with SB 1, which is was found unconstitutional. Governor Rauner came in and tried to do it with this what he called a consideration model, which was not a consideration model. It was choose, do you want this diminishment or that diminishment? Well, it was clearly unconstitutional. So, like I said, I get that people want to pursue this, but already, Governor-elect Pritzker, almost governor, mm-hmm. Governor Lick Pritzker said he won't sign that, or, well, actually he doesn't have to sign it, but he said he would not support that. 74 Democrats in the General Assembly, in the House of Representatives, and 41 in the Senate. There's no way that bill, that gets on. It's just not going to happen.
And I would also mention that, you know, this is coming, contractually, you entered into a contract with this employee. Mm-hmm. You can't say, oh, by the way, we're not going to honor the contract. You can't do that. So going forward is by far the best approach. And
to that end, I was the sponsor of what was Tier 3 pension legislation, right? And that is moving to a 401k style with a smaller defined. You know, I'm in support of those sorts of fixes going forward. But as we fix things going forward, we still have to deal with the debt that we owe the old system.
We have to take a break here, and a listener asks for us to specify what exactly is a progressive income tax. What does that look like? So we'll talk about that when we come back. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show on 720 WGN. I'm joined by the political cartoonist from the Chicago Tribune, Scott Stantis, and member of the editorial board, Representative Robert Martwick from the Rootin' Tootin' 19th District. And if you don't know who your state legislators are, go to openstates.org. You can put in your information and find out who your legislators are. We'll talk more about that too when we come back on 720 WGN. Cynicism is attractive and easy, you know, when you think, oh, well, my vote doesn't matter, I'm not going to bother. Really, that's not the truth. I've had so many long conversations with with both of my guests tonight. Representative Robert Martwick joins us. He represents the Rootin' Tootin' 19th District over by Dare on the northwest side of Chicago and Harwood Heights as well, mm-hmm. parts of Jefferson Park, Portage Park. Have I got all the neighborhoods?
Gladstone Park,
yes.
Dunning. Norwich, Harwood Heights, a little sliver of Elmwood Park and River Grove.
So, you know, and folks can go to your office or call or email and say, hey, these are the things that are important to me. And if you don't know, everyone, if you don't know who your legislators are, go to openstates.org. You can find out who your state reps are, your state senator, who your federal representatives, who your congresspeople are. Everything is right there. You just enter in a little bit of information and you can learn more. And Scott Stantis is the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and member of the editorial board. We're getting some calls and texts from our listeners. Let's start with I mentioned before the break that we were going to talk about the progressive tax, and then we'll go to Jason's phone call. The 773 says, what does that specifically mean? What does that look like?
So it can look like a lot of things, but basically a 101 explanation is that a progressive income tax is currently in Illinois, we have a flat rate, which means no matter what your income level is, you have a 4.95% flat income tax assessed. So your tax rate is basically 5% of your income goes to taxation. Progressive income taxes, which exist in 37 states in the country, 37 of the 50 states have progressive income taxes, say that they're structured like our federal government, where there are lower rates for lower incomes, and then there are certain thresholds, and the rate jumps up a little bit. So progressive income tax states in the United States, there are some states where the rates go from 1 to 6%. There are some where they go 1 to 9%, some where they go 1 to 12. I think in Hawaii, they go up to as high as 14%. So each state has different thresholds, and so that's what a progressive income tax is. I filed a bill in 2016 that said if we adopted the progressive income tax rates of the state of Wisconsin, we could use the money that would be raised as revenue to pay down our pension debts and do a property tax swap, which would lower our property taxes, make the system a little bit more fair, giving relief for the middle class, working class, and poor.
And so a lot of people wonder, like, are there numbers? Like, if you make less than $75,000, if you make...
And the answer is yes, but there are the possibilities are infinite, right? So that is, again, what I did was instead of reinventing the wheel, I said, let me take an example. And the example that I chose was the state of Wisconsin. Why? They're our neighbor, number one, so mm-hmm. that there's some relevance there. Number two, they have the flattest and most predictable of all of the income, the progressive income tax rate structures. So their rates go from 4 to 7.65, which is relatively flat. It's not a big arc. It's a pretty flat arc. And the 7.65 is assessed on all income over $265,000. So, you know, it raised $5.5 billion, and I used all of that money to solve problems, like I said, lowering property taxes, lowering sales tax rates, and lowering our debt that we owe, which, again, will solve our problems.
And to that, then, the if it starts at 4, that means it would be lower than, if you know, in, for certain tax brackets, it would be lower than it already is in the state of Illinois. So some people would pay less.
Yes, and that's right. And again, that's not necessarily, like, you know, that where the rates would end up, but mm-hmm. it's an illustration of where they could be. It could be anything. And that's, you know, we're going to go before a legislature, and a governor is going to weigh in on this. So there'll be a lot of people weighing in on exactly where the tax rates should fall. But I use that as what I thought was a good illustration.
And one of our listeners, Jason, wanted to join the conversation. You mentioned our debts and possibly being able to have the ability to pay them with a progressive tax. Jason, what was your question?
Yeah, hi. Good evening. Yeah, I was wondering, what if we can't pay them? What happens?
What happens if we can't pay our debts? Well, we continue to pay parts, like,
yes.
Chip away at it.
Why can't we offer 20 cents on the dollar, number one? And number two, my question is, can we just file bankruptcy on it? My third question is, if the Supreme Court judges that are ruling on this, isn't it a conflict of interest because they are beneficiaries of the state pension system?
So there are three good questions, Jason, and let me try and get them in order. Number one, and one and two are sort of the same, is what happens if we can't pay our debts and could we just file bankruptcy? So states are not permitted to file bankruptcy. They're not under the federal bankruptcy code. States cannot go bankrupt. So you have to pay your debts. I don't know what would happen. I mean, we are a long way away from being unable. We're not in that sort of situation where we're unable to pay our debts. We're actually on a path towards that. But the amount of our debt, what's happening is the service on the debt that we have is crowding out our ability to spend on other things. So we're a long way away from not being able to pay our debts. The problem is that our debts are not allowing us to invest as much into higher education and social services and the things that we'd like to spend, infrastructure, things that we need to be spending money on. We're not able to because the debt service is so big. So the third thing, conflict of interest, every pension bill that's been put forth exempts the court system so that the judges don't have a conflict of interest on that decision.
Thank you so much, Jason. I hope that helped a little bit.
A quick question, who pays the judge's pension if the state doesn't?
No, the judges contribute to their own pensions, and then there's an employer portion as well, yes.
Yep. Right, so the state pays their pension, so that's a huge conflict of interest. The judges are ruling on who could go ahead and pay their pensions or not, or if there should be reform on that or not.
I guess you could say that about even the legislators, too. You know,
yeah, it's a citizen. Yeah, anytime there's a citizen government, there's always, everyone has a conflict of interest.
Thank you so much, Jason. I appreciate your input. Be safe. It sounds like you're driving, so take care. I also wanted to ask you about the local school boards. I know that Bill Daley was talking about eliminating the neighborhood school boards and then creating, I'm not sure what his plan was there.
So he wants to eliminate the local school council, so every school has a local school council, and he wants to create neighborhood school councils. So this is like, you know, this is while there's been this huge push in almost every sector of our society in the city of Chicago to create more democracy in the Chicago public schools, a school system that has almost no democracy, Bill Daley wants to go in the other direction. It's to me, and I'm sorry, I have a personal stake in this because I'm the author of the bill for an elected representative school board for the Chicago Public Schools. But to me, it seems like, wow, how out of touch are you? The people, 90% of the people who voted in a referendum said that they wanted an elected school board. He's saying we should not only not have an elected school board, we should get rid of all of these local school councils and get fewer of them. That boggles my mind. And listen, hey, maybe he's onto something that I don't. I mean, I'm not that smart that I'm sure I'm right and he's wrong. But boy, that just doesn't seem like what the citizens of the city of Chicago want right now.
Now, Scott, you have, for the next 5 weeks, you've got this, you know, mayoral race that's going to continue to go back and forth. How do you pare it down? It depends on the
We were talking
day.
Off during the break. I, you know, we're going, well, what about this candidate? And how about this candidate? And how about this candidate? And we spoke for a long time and really didn't talk about the same candidate twice.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I wish I could answer that. I mean, you look at the front runners and there seem to be, you know, a lot of them.
Do you think having this many candidates helps bring up more topics that perhaps Chicagoans, you know, want to talk about or are, you know, want to hear more about?
No, I think what happens is if you have a I'm trying to think of the technical term. Oh yeah, crap ton of candidates, you get a Donald Trump. Don't forget the Republican primary of 2016 had a bunch of very good candidates.
Mm-hmm. I think we also had a unique situation, too, where people really felt disenfranchised and didn't see anybody. They wanted someone that, you know, they were drawn to the, you know, speaking his mind. And there were people who were angry, obviously. I think that was part of that. I don't know. Are Chicagoans angry? Are they looking for someone that reflects them? I don't know that we're at that kind of dynamic right now.
No, I think Chicagoans are. They have a hunger for change. You
yes.
know, they want some sort of change, some sort of transformation. And right, wrong, good, bad, or indifferent, I get the sense that that's what they want. I think that the problem with all of these, with 15 candidates, is that issues come up and all of these candidates want to be a part of that change. And so we had that candidate forum, Patty, that you were the moderator at. And the amazing thing to me was we would bring up a big issue and it was like they all agreed.
Yeah.
There was very little that these candidates disagree on.
And there was only one person that didn't want dibs. McCarthy.
But that was classic because he's the classic police officer. He's also yeah. he also didn't want to get rid of red light cameras, right?
Yeah.
But for the most part, there's very little difference in these candidates. They have very diverse backgrounds, and they come from very different places, different financial situations, but yet when you start to ask them on the issues, they all seem to be like falling in line. And when that happens, and I think this is what you're talking about, is that with all of these candidates all saying the same thing, no one's distinguishing themselves. And you don't need much. You need to be in the teens to get into the runoff in this.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you never know what could happen here. Any small base, if some small base gets around one candidate, that candidate can find themselves in a runoff.
Let's take a quick break here. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
This is Chicago.
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 Hilson.
Rogers Park.
Uptown.
Worker Park.
My favorite place in the city is
River North. Hyde Park.
Navy Pier.
Englewood.
The Hemingway District in Oak Park.
The Loop.
Navy Pier.
All the museums.
68th and Carpenter.
This is Chicago.
Born and raised.
I am born and raised. That's a clip from Voices of the City. Joining us in the studio is John Nichols. We're also joined by Representative Robert Martwick, who is also a lifelong Chicagoan. John, tell me a little bit about this project and what your role is.
My role in the project is the creator and the audio artist. We go out on the street. I record people. We ask them where their favorite place is in the city. And we combine it and create a collage out of it, an audio collage, and that is what you just heard.
And I grew up in Norwood Park, which I'm okay that I didn't hear it in the clip, but there are neighborhoods that people have never heard of. We have a segment called Overbite Air, right? Because my dad was a Northside Chicagoan, and that's how he would say over there. And I learned about a lot of, like, I had never heard of Avalon Park. And are you surprised when people go, where's that?
I hadn't heard of many of these neighborhoods and suburbs when I went out to record them for the first place either, so it was a learning experience for everybody involved.
What's your goal in this project?
Well, I think
I don't mean to imply that you have to have a goal. I mean, this sounds like something that you want to express.
We definitely want to, I certainly want to promote more travel. We want to destigmatize the violent reputation of Chicago for those who are coming into the city, and we want to promote integration and inclusiveness.
That's something that we, Representative Martwick and I, talk a lot about, because the northwest side of Chicago is very resistant to having people come in, you know, that look different, and there are a lot of stereotypes and stigmas, like you mentioned. How do you crack through that? I mean, is it doing this and having, you know, this personalized view of what it means to be a Chicagoan?
Well, it's a very complex question. How do you crack through it? I think you need to attack from all angles at one time, at one, you know, moment, if you want to really get through it. This project that I'm doing, Voices of the City, is a small project that contributes to the overall goal. But if people really want to break through, then yeah, there's education, you have economics to deal with, so many different things.
What has surprised you the most in doing this project? What was, because you kind of go in with an idea or a concept, I'm guessing.
I'd say what surprised me was the willingness of people to participate. Because when I first went out on the street and I'm thinking, well, we got the approval to do the project with Pace Suburban Bus. Pace Suburban Bus was fantastic. And when I realized, okay, we're actually going to do this, I've got to go and get these recordings from people and probably need to start with at least several hundred. Right now we have a little bit over 350. And yeah, just seeing people ready to record and, you know, participate in the project and have fun. And I think that was it.
And how is this going to be used? How is Pace planning to use this art?
They're broadcasting it on their buses.
So is it, so while people are on the bus, they're going to hear?
They are hearing it. It started on December 17th.
Oh, congratulations.
Really?
Yeah. Wow.
And how will they rotate through then? If you're, because you're continuing to collect more voices and more points of view on this.
Well, right now, it's six audio collages that are being broadcast on 16 different routes around the city, and we focused on the ones that connect with the airports.
Okay.
And I think the way that it's going to go is we're going to figure out, you know, what do we need to do to make this project work? What do we need to do to tweak it?
Mm-hmm.
To troubleshoot, you know, what are the complexities in this project that we need to confront? For example, do the override messages work, or is it playing at the exact stop that we want it to play? Things of that nature. Is the rotation working the way that it should work? So right now we're in the tweak phase.
And there, you know, I love the idea of, here, Representative Martwick, if I said, well, first, where are you from? What would be your answer on that one?
Jefferson Park.
Jefferson Park. And then the second question is, John, is?
Where is your favorite place in the city or suburbs?
Put you on the spot.
Where's your favorite place?
And so when you just put them on the spot and they got to say it right off the top of their head.
People probably think about it, don't they, a little bit? I would have to.
Some of them think about it. Some of them come up with something right away.
Yeah. I are a lot of them restaurants, museums, parks?
We did get a lot of restaurants. We have museums, parks, definitely. Millennium Park is a really common answer. That's one of our collages now. The Voice of the City collage, I just completed one that's all Millennium Park. The one you heard there has a variety of different neighborhoods, really highlighting the diversity. But on the other hand, you have some of these collages where we focus on, like, sports in Chicago, for example, like Wrigley Field or Sox Park or the United Center.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's plenty of answers that people give. Some of them are more unique. Some of them are like the lake. Is a common one.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I would imagine. I love my
lake. That's what I was just thinking. You know, and it's so typical that, given what I do for a living, that as I think about my favorite places in Chicago, I was realizing there are places that I never go to.
Yeah, and that's
right?
That's
too busy.
Really,
too busy working. You know,
yeah,
so.
And that's really John's goal here, is to open up all the possibilities in this city. And I mean, and how do, I mean, you know, I wonder, are people maybe, you know, I hope they're Googling while they're on the bus listening to, like, oh, I've never heard of that, or where's that neighborhood? I'm guessing that's part of the goal, too, is in the moment.
I think there's a mix of responses at this point, because what I'm trying to do as the artist in the project is to discover what amount of locations is the best to reach people.
Sure.
What's the most effective? Because if you have 20 different locations, is it going over people's heads? Maybe we want to reiterate some of these locations so people actually look at it. Like a location like Promontory Point, for example. Have you ever heard of Promontory
Point? I've never been.
I had never heard of it either. Mm-hmm. It's right by the planetarium. It's a wonderful location where you could view the whole skyline and the lake. It's beautiful. But so if you say Promontory Point, for example, in one of the audio collages one time, and then you go into a number of other locations, you know, say like Navy Pier, that's one that everybody knows. And then you have someone that saw a location like nobody's ever heard of, like Memorial Park in Bellwood was one that I can think of off the top of my head. And you go through a series of these locations. Are you going to remember Promontory Point by the time you get to the end of the experience?
Right.
You know,
I will now. I'm going to lock that into my mind. Promontory Point.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what, you know, I think we're working with now. The project just started December 17th. And, you know, I go on the bus and it's like a composer of a symphony, for example. If you take someone like Gustav Mahler, I don't know if you listen to Mahler or any. Mozart, for example, composed symphonies right off the top of his head. He didn't have to do too many revisions. But if you take someone like Mahler, he revised his symphonies constantly after hearing them, after hearing the orchestra perform. He's changing them for years, years and years afterward based on what he heard. So I think right now the creative powers in the project are revising based on the performance.
And the tone and what you because you're obviously, you know, hearing it. And as you mentioned, it's a collage. And I'm excited to hear how this continues to develop. 312-981-7200. You can call or text us. Let us know where your favorite place is in Chicago or in the suburbs. 312-981-7200. Tell us your neighborhood. Tell us where your favorite place is. And you only get to pick one. Did you decide it was the beach, the lake?
You can pick more than one.
You can pick more than one. We're not going to put you on the spot.
You know, for me, so I can't say anything without offering a little explanation, right? You know, that's me. But it's where I can go and really be calm and peaceful. So I would say it's Hollywood Beach, or it's which I really love. Or, and again, I maybe get there once a year. Or it's sitting in the stands on a warm summer day in Wrigley Field watching a Cubs game.
That's a good one. Tom, how about you? Neighborhood.
We needed that one. We need to play the Wrigley Field one later in this show.
Yes,
because
I think we will. I think we will. I guess this is kind of a weird one, but because it's also my place of employment. But I would say the new 400 Theater in Rogers Park.
There you go.
Rogers Park is, like, I'm from the suburbs, so I adopted Rogers Park as my home because I went to Loyola, and it was a place where I found a lot of solace, and I loved it enough that I was like, hey, you guys should employ me. So it's one of my favorite places.
Well, mine, I'm Jefferson Park, and I love the Chicago History Museum. 312-981-7200. Let us know where your favorite place is in Chicago or the suburbs. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
This is Chicago.
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 My favorite place is Wrigley Field.
Wrigley Field.
Wrigley Field on a good day.
I love Wrigley Field.
My favorite place is Wrigley Field.
White Sox Stadium.
White Sox, by the way.
The White Sox.
And the United Center.
United Center.
The United Center.
Best city in, you know, the United States.
Best city in the whole United States. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios with a spectacular view of Navy Pier and this beautiful city. Joining me is Representative Robert Martwick of the Root and Tootin 19th District and John Nichols, who has created Voices of the City. It's an incredible project enriching the metropolitan audioscape to promote inclusive travel. And I love what you created. This is beautiful. Joining us on the line, we were asking, what are your favorite places in Chicago? And I love that we're hearing from folks. John, here is Christy. Hey, Christy, where are you from?
From Elmhurst.
And what is your favorite place?
Well, my favorite place is Garfield Park Conservatory. I just love going there, and especially in the wintertime. You walk in and you're hit by this wonderful, moist, tropical air, and it's always beautiful there, and it's such a great escape, and it gets more beautiful every time I visit. So that is the place where I like to take people when they visit from out of town. I wanted to share that with you guys.
I love that. How often do you get a chance to get over there? Do you make a date with yourself and say, I've got to get over to the Garfield Park Conservatory?
I do. I've been there by myself before, but recently, probably about 2 or 3 weeks ago, my husband and I went on the day off.
Oh, that's lovely.
That's fantastic.
I'll bet you get that quite a bit too, don't you?
Garfield Park Conservatory, we have a few of those.
Yeah. I like the Lincoln Park Conservatory as well.
Yep, that one's in there too.
I'm with you, Chrissy. That's wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great night. One of our listeners, we have two listeners that texted in a couple places. The 219 says, my favorite place in the city is Montrose Dog Beach, the happiest place in Chicago, and I don't even own a dog. I'm originally from the Northwest Indiana area, but I'm now a Northsider in Ravenswood.
Montrose Beach, we do have that one.
Yeah. Live right down the street from Montrose Beach, best beach in the city. I'll fight for that.
Oh,
I'll die on that cross.
It is a fantastic
Do you have
beach.
A dog, Tom?
No, I am allergic. I just kind of watch, but I also, you know, take a bunch of Claritin before I go.
There you go. The beaches are going to be pretty popular. My favorite beach is North Avenue, though. I was a guard there. I was a lifeguard for 2 years. I love that beach.
I like Ohio.
Ohio is great, too. That's where all the nice thing there is because it's so people don't seem to know about it. Right?
It's a secret.
She just told everybody,
until
John.
Now.
Yeah, what are you doing?
What do I do?
I do like Ohio.
I take it back.
They got a nice
it
little restaurant. The 312 says the Northwestern University Lakefront in Evanston and the Fullerton Corridor if you're a beer lover. The Fullerton Corridor. I'm not
That's
familiar.
That's a new one.
Yeah. While your head like snapped up, you're like, wait, the Fullerton Corridor.
I have not heard that one.
I have not heard that one. And then this is in our neck of the woods, literally. Representative Martwick and I live on the northwest side. The 312 says, Whalen Pool is one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah. I need to write that one down because I like to go to pools and swim.
Well, this is it's a forest preserve pool, which is unique in the city. Yeah. I think it's, I don't know if it's the only one. But yeah, Whalen Pool is
and it's huge.
It's huge. It has two slides. It has a little kiddie area. It has a zero depth, so you walk in. You can just wade in. So if you just want to sit like on the edge of the water, there's a jet area. It's part water park, part forest preserve because you're in the middle of the forest. There's a grassy area where people can picnic. There's a concession stand. It's got everything. It's mm-hmm. our favorite place. It's weird because I have such strange memories of it. Do you remember when you were a kid?
Oh yeah.
So when we were kids, they had those jets you had to walk through, remember? Mm-hmm. Now you can just take a shower, but right. You had to go through a forced cold shower. Yeah, that is I have to agree with the 312. That is one of the best places in Chicago. I don't know if because I have a son with special needs, it's a perfect place for him because of the zero depth and also the kind of kiddie area and the jets. He loves all that sensory stuff.
We got to save that one for the summer season.
Yes, it's no go now. I'm kidding. You can't go now. We have Ruth. Where are you from, Ruth?
At the moment, I am Gurnee, named after a Chicago mayor. My kind of town, Chicago, is Chinatown. Chicago Union Station.
Yeah.
When people are coming in from all over the country for Thanksgiving, the Great Lakes Naval Metro Train Station. When the graduates are there with their families, headed for Chicago, my kind of town.
Oh, Ruth, I love it. And Union Station is one of my favorite places, too. I have to agree with you on that. And not just because they shot the Untouchables there. Thank you, Ruth.
Especially.
Yes.
It was a great New Year's Eve, Patty.
Oh.
Not seeing you again.
It was great seeing you again, too, Ruth.
And you know what, Patty? I still love the Bears, even though I'm a Green Bay Packer fan, and God bless them.
Oh, that's very nice
of
you.
But you know what?
They need
it this week. The emblem of the country is the eagle.
That's right. That's right, Ruth. Thank you so much. Have a great night. Be well. We've got to take another call. Here's George. Hey, George, where are you from?
Rogers Park.
Rogers Park. And a big shout out for Rogers Park. We love that neighborhood. What's your favorite place in Chicago?
I do, too.
Yep.
Well, it's not really in Chicago. It's in Evanston on the Northwestern campus. It's called Shakespeare Garden.
Yeah, that's a great one, too. I'm familiar with that one. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Okay, that's a great place to sit and relax. And you know, it's just one of my favorite places.
I love it. How do you get a chance to get out there? I mean, obviously, it's a little cold now, but in the summer, do you make a date with yourself and go over there?
I've done that. I've done that with a girl, and you know, it's just a nice place to sit and talk and relax. But I like doing stuff like that in the winter because I work outside all the time, so it's not cold. You know, I just bundle up and enjoy that too.
Oh, that's great! You gotta get some fresh air, especially in these cold months. Well, thank you so much for that, George. We appreciate it. Have a great night.
You too. Now, thank you.
Thank you. And we have a correction from the 312. It was not Fullerton Street corridor. It's the Fulton, Fulton corridor.
Okay.
So I'm not familiar with that either. With the various beers in the area. But
Fulton, is that also known as the Fulton Market?
Fulton Market area? I think so. We'll have to do some research on that. Hey, Kathy, where are you from?
I'm from Highland Park.
From Highland Park, and what's your favorite place?
Buckingham Fountain.
See, there's so many great ones. The Buckingham Fountain is wonderful. Did you get now? Do you have a summer it ever goes by and you're like, I can't believe I didn't get a chance to get down to Buckingham Fountain?
It's kind of tough with the parking, but if you can figure out that, it's just so beautiful to look at, and it makes a beautiful sound, and it's so symmetrical.
And then I'm also going to throw a shout out to the Ryerson Library at the Art Institute for a winter spot. If you want to set art and have, you know, kind of archived art books. And, of course, Wrigley Field.
Oh, there you go. Those are some great destinations.
Classics.
Thank you so much, Kathy. It was wonderful to hear from you.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. From the 708, hey, Patty and guests, the Oak Park Conservatory and Chicago Botanic Garden. Thank you for this topic. And that's Sue from River Forest. She enjoys photography and art. Yeah, I have to. Well, I'm not familiar with the Oak Park Conservatory. That's from your neck of the woods.
It is. And it is a fantastic conservatory. I remember when I was a kid, I released praying mantises in that conservatory.
I'm sorry, what?
I released praying mantises in there with permission.
I hope so.
It was for pest control, for biological pest control.
Okay. Yep. Hey, we all have things that we have to get done. The conservatory.
I think I was like 5 or 6 years old. I was taking a science class there.
I have not been to the Oak Park Conservatory. I have spent a lot of time at the Chicago Botanic Gardens. We always go throughout the year, whether it's for the pumpkins. They do great pumpkin carvings there. They have the Christmas train. Have you ever taken Bobby out there for the trains?
At the Oak Park?
No, at the Chicago Botanic Gardens.
Oh.
You got to get out there.
No.
And the pumpkins are beautiful.
We took them to the Illinois Railway Museum, which was pretty neat.
That's cool. Has that come up yet, the Illinois Railway Museum?
It has not.
Oh, that's a great place, too.
Well, it's not really Chicago.
But it's suburbs, too.
It's definitely suburbs.
That's almost Wisconsin.
That's almost, well, yeah, yeah. It's almost, it's Western Illinois, so it's a bit of a hike.
It's a drive, yeah. That's a half a day. You got to be able to take some time out. What's the name of that Western town out there? Is that still open? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, and I don't know. We drove past it. It's right there.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
I can never remember the name of that place. But they have, like, you can pretend like you're panning for gold, you know, that kind of stuff. What are some of the places that we've missed that has come up quite a bit on the? I know. When we get a moment, we're gonna also play the museums, because I mentioned the Chicago History Museum as being one of my favorite places. I, of course, Art Museum I know comes up quite a bit.
The Art Institute comes up a lot. One caller just mentioned that one.
I'm such a science and industry fan. Oh. I love that museum.
Brookfield Zoo.
Yeah.
That one's come up quite a bit.
Lincoln Park is wonderful, too.
Lincoln Park. We did some recordings in Lincoln Park. Absolutely. DePaul University. I remember
DePaul.
One answer was the smoking steps on DePaul University.
Where people just hang out and smoke?
I guess they just hang out there and smoke.
Hey, Tom, before we go, can you play the one with the museums, too? I know we've got an audio clip before we go. Let's see. I also, from the... here you go.
This is Chicago.
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 My favorite place is Art Institute.
The 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 Art Institute of Chicago.
I really like all the museums.
I love museum campus.
My favorite place is the Southwick Museum.
Museum of Modern Art.
Ah, this is Chicago.
Oh, that's wonderful. John, before you go, I got a couple more that just came in. The 847 says, my favorite places are Montrose Harbor for fishing, Museum of Science and Industry, and strolling the lakeshore bike path. Another caller from the 773 says, Betty Bot Shop, all vegan, 100% gluten-free, and Nightshade Tree corn-free at 7100 South Shore. And that was the Wild West town that we were talking about, which is in Union, Illinois. So thank you so much to our listeners for sharing that. John, congratulations on this project, and we'd love to hear more as it continues to grow. And everyone be listening. It's on the Pace buses from the airports?
Yes, it's on a number of Pace buses. They're listed on the website.
Which is?
VoicesOfTheCity.net.
VoicesOfTheCity.net. Congratulations, and we
thank
wish you all
thank
the
you
best.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, our pleasure. More in a moment on 720 WGN. We are hanging out in the Allstate Skyline Studios. You're listening to WGN Radio, 720 AM. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. By the way, if you miss any of the show, everything gets podcast. You can go to Patty V Show. You can also go to WGNRadio.com to catch up on any of the past shows. And this show will be available for you to listen to. And we'll probably have a couple different segments if there's one thing that you wanted to hear in particular. I think Jarrell, we'll get Jarrell Javier, such a sweet kid who's part of the production of the Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical. Representative Martwick joins us in studio. He represents the Rootin' Tootin' 19th District. Do you get a chance to go see theater very often? Because I know you're busy and there's a lot going on in the community.
It is a challenge, and of course, 2.5 years ago, I decided to have a child, so that takes up a little bit of time too. But my wife and I are big fans of the Gift Theater right in Jefferson Park.
Yeah.
I will say unequivocally the best storefront theater in the world, and I say that because they've been reviewed in international trade publications. They've hosted original works by Tony winning playwrights, so they're really top of the game, and so my wife serves on the board there, and we love getting there when we can, but like everything else, time is always a challenge.
I was just thinking, when you mentioned that the Gift Theater has playwrights, they stage these productions of artists from all over the world, and there was Tom, did you see that series on Netflix? I think it was called The OA, is that right?
Yeah, I didn't watch it, but I was aware of its presence.
That was the woman who wrote The OA. There was a production that she had, a play that she had written, staged at the Gift Theater. So that gives you an idea of people who kind of go on and do other things
Michael Patrick Thornton, creative director,
who people will remember from The Practice.
Founder. Yes.
Yes, from the series The Practice.
Yeah, and...
And not just that. I mean, incredible,
really talented.
Career.
And again, like you said, they did an original play from David Rabe, who is a multi-Tony Award-winning and playwright, and he was a Pulitzer Prize-winning finalist. And he is just amazing. And he chose the 40-seat Gift Theater as the venue to display, to produce an original work, right? I mean, that's just amazing. And it just got rave reviews. It's a wonderful place. We really like it. The theater's so intimate because it's 40 seats. Mm-hmm. The actors are on top of you. You are part of the set. It's amazing.
And you can go to the Gift Theater. I'm trying to find the website for it. I'm guessing it's thegifttheater.com. And in the neighborhood in Jefferson Park, you could take the Blue Line there. There's great restaurants. There's great cafes. You can go to Westin's. You can get some great ribs at the Gale Street Inn.
Absolutely. And that's a common thing is, get off the Blue Line, walk across to Gale Street, walk down to the Gift Theater and back. So it's great.
And it's thegifttheater.org. And they've got their entire, season available for you to take a look and see what's coming up there. And there have been people who have texted and asked, what is a storefront theater? And this literally is what would otherwise be rented out as a store's retail. And they've taken it and converted it. Converted into a theater, and there's 40 seats, and the range of what they accomplished there is miraculous.
And one of the things that really drew me to them, despite the fact that you go to a theater for their art, and their art is just mind-blowing. But beyond that, me being a Democrat, me being a guy who likes to think that I stand up for, middle class, working class, and families and their ability to have a place in this world, the Gift Theater has made the decision to be an equity theater. So they are 100% part of the Actors Screen Stage Actors Guild, I think is what it's called.
It's a union, yeah.
Yes, and so that means that all of the members of their ensemble are getting paid a living wage, and they're receiving health care benefits and retirement benefits, and that's a huge commitment from the theater to do that, and I think it's wonderful.
And from the community.
Yes, yeah. It is, yeah.
Yeah, it is a wonderful place. And if you don't have a chance to get to the theater, maybe there's a storefront theater in your community. Do you get a chance, Tom, to get to some of the storefront theaters? I know that you work so many, wide range of hours, whether it's here at WGN or at the 400. You also produce podcasts. Mm-hmm. It's a lot going on.
I always try to do a little bit of storefront stuff. I'm a big fan of like black box theaters as well.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I was in college, Loyola had a pretty great black box theater in their student center, and I saw some really interesting stuff. And I think those smaller as much as I love Broadway in Chicago and those, stuff at the Steppenwolf and Goodman are always great, I love getting into those spaces because they're incredibly intimate, and I think that's where people can really start to fall in love with the craft, seeing it that up close. It really drives home what everybody's doing,
yeah,
and how much work they're putting in.
That's true.
Yeah, I saw a production of Othello at the gift. And during the big monologue, I mean, literally projectile expectoration onto the crowd, you know, and I was like, yeah, that is intimate. Thank God I'm three seats over, though. So,
when you, well, okay, you know, funny you should say that, because when you're articulating, if you're really trying to project, you are spitting. There I used to, Zany's on Wells, which is my home comedy club. I've been performing there for a long time, and I would get self, because you can see it in the lights. I can see it coming out of my mouth sometimes, and I'll back up because there are people sitting really close. So I'll back up so that it's sort of, I don't, you know, aerosol the whole front row.
Right.
Yeah, but that means that they are projecting. Now Tom pulled a couple of stories. You know, when Declan was taking some, there was a high school in our neighborhood that was providing special needs therapy, pool therapy. And the high school, you know, is very, it's a pretty dense high school. And whenever we would roll up, there would be a ton of cars parked in the handicap spots. And I hate being the one, because I, you know, Declan has a wheelchair, and I hate being the one that rolls up and is like, do you actually have a placard? I would check for like a placard or for plates, and it was almost always parents waiting for their kids, because those are the parking spots closest to whether it was the diamond, you know, where their kids are having baseball practice, or the back doors of the high school. Now, you know, I never called the cops. I never was like, you know, I didn't want to be that person. I thought about taking pictures of their plates and shaming them. And it's like, how far do I want to go with this? You know, right. But they would take up spots to the point where I wouldn't be able to park in a handicapped spot and have to walk with the wheelchair. And I, you know, you don't want to have to be, you know, honk at somebody and all that stuff. Well, here in Ohio, police and school administrators are fighting over parking. And the dispute is over the no parking zone between two handicapped spots. And a police officer was ticketing the principal. The principal was parking between the two spots. A citation was issued to the vehicle for the handicap parking violation. Within 1 hour, the superintendent had ordered two administrators to go to Jefferson and escort the SRO off the property. I'm trying to see what the SRO is. That's the, I think it's the principal.
Isn't that the school resource officer?
Oh, it's the officer. The police officer who issued the ticket was escorted off the premises?
Yeah, they like fired him. Because
for ticketing the principal for parking between the handicap spots.
Yeah.
What?
It's corruption at a different level.
Oh, yeah. No kidding.
Which left the school without a police officer for the day, too. So they were like mad at him for following through on his responsibilities, which is making sure that people weren't parking illegally. See, and that's probably why no one gets ticketed at that high school in our neighborhood, because they're like, they don't want to tick off the parents at the school,
which is ridiculous.
It really
is.
That's crazy. But because a school spokesperson said the district employee did move the vehicle when asked, but the principal had been warned several times that that's not a legal spot to park in. I don't know.
You know that I've learned interesting stuff about this over the years. Because of people who've gotten tickets, and they'll call me up. That's not fair. I got a ticket.
For a handicap spot?
Yeah. And so, of course, with every handicap spot, there is the spot that you're supposed to park in, and then there's the stripes, which is the access area.
Yep.
You can't park on those stripes. Even if you have a handicap placard, you're not supposed to park on those stripes.
Right.
You're only supposed to park within the space, and then that is supposed to be access area. So if that's where he was parking, I'm glad he got a ticket.
So the reason that is highlighted, so if you're wondering, so the ones that have like the sort of angled line, in between the handicap spots, that's so a van that is accessible, like a lot of vans that have wheelchairs, that a ramp folds out.
Right.
So if you're parked in a spot, and there will be people who park then next to a handicap accessible van, so now the person cannot get into their van because the ramp can't come down.
Right.
And so I get it. I get that it seems like, oh, well, it's not marked as handicap. I'm just going to park, or I'm only parking for a few minutes.
Or I have a handicap placard, so I'll just park on the stripes.
Right.
But you can't do that. Even with a handicap placard, you can't park on the stripes.
We all got to try to follow the rules.
And
this is one of those ones, man. Everyone just get along. Can't you just get along?
There's got to be some sort of basic human decency in this world. And like, can't we all agree, don't park in the handicap spaces, because everybody thinks it's never going to be them that takes away the space from a person who really needs it.
Right.
But then that time comes that you've done it, and then you really deserve to get slapped with like that $500 ticket.
It is a big ticket. Sometimes it's $175. And I know that people think, well, I'm just waiting for somebody. If someone really needs it, they'll let me know. Well, then you put me or another family in the uncomfortable position of like, excuse me, you know, it's, you know, it's awkward because I don't want to be that person. I don't want to have to roll up and get, you know, I can ask nicely, but I shouldn't. I don't want to.
Out of curiosity, Patty, because you've obviously dealt with this, what's your thoughts on handicap placard abuse?
Yeah, it's frustrating because it makes people suspicious of us,
right?
You know, and it diminishes the overall accessibility. It makes it hard for people who truly do need them, you know. And, you know, in the back of my mind, because I know there's abuse, it also makes me suspicious of fellow families. You know, do you really? You know, I don't want to feel that way either. You know, I'm trying to, you know, my goals for 2019 is to have more empathy. Because, I mean, you know, you get so frustrated with life. You dig in and you get angry about things. And I found myself last year just struggling. So I'm trying to find ways where I, you know, take a breath and hope that people are not taking advantage. But yeah, it's despicable when people take advantage of the handicap placards and abuse it.
Yeah.
More after this on 720 WGN. The 301 says it's truly shameful when people don't follow the rules regarding handicapped parking spaces. It is. It's disappointing. It makes you question humanity a little bit. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Joining me is Representative Robert Martwick from the Rootin' Tootin' 19th. Tom Hush producing tonight. And we have one of our favorite callers on the line with us. It's Trucker Rich. Hey, Trucker Rich. How you doing?
I'm doing great tonight, Patty. How you doing?
Oh, it's always great to hear your voice, my friend.
You know, after my lung surgery, they took out part of my lung. My breathing capacity is down, and I've got arthritis in a knee. So the doctors gave me a permanent hang tag, you know, with the option of buying a plate. But I just took the hang tag, so I don't use it all the time. But I can transfer that hang tag from my pickup truck to my semi, which looks really weird, and then.
How do you take fit the semi in that spot?
Yeah, really.
Well, they've actually got handicapped parking spots in truck stops.
That makes
really?
Sense. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and in rest areas too, like for trucks or the big RVs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you ever pull into a rest area, there's always at least three handicapped spots. But I went to the local Walmart one day on my motorcycle, and I had the hang tag on the windshield, up on the windshield of the bike, and I parked in the stripes, you know, like at the very end of the parking stalls.
Right.
You know, I don't know how to describe it, but you couldn't have parked a car there. There was no room for, you know, there was always plenty of room for a ramp, and I understand that. But
right.
I had somebody call the cops on me.
Really?
For parking in those.
Huh.
You know, and the cop come, and I go, here's my hang tag, run the numbers, here's my license, I'm authorized it. I says, should I park my motorcycle in the handicap parking stall or on the lines where I'm not bothering anybody that needs to use the handicap stall?
Right. What when that's,
you know, and it was like,
well, we all have this preconceived idea of what a handicap placard owner should look like and what sort of meets the standard of. But it is also, I had a friend who had a clot in her heart, and she had a placard because she couldn't walk very far. She also, you know, she had trouble with her circulation, and, you know, but people would cost her and demand to know why she had a handicap placard. So when you asked earlier, Representative Martwick, about, you know, people abusing it, I give people space, and I don't, you know, I in my mind, I wonder sometimes, but the people who are judgmental, Trucker Rich, I'm so sorry about that.
Hey, that's no problem. And in fact, I don't use it all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if I'm feeling good that day, I don't take a handicap stall because I know there's people who have more needs of it than I do.
Yeah.
But that lady that called the cops on me, I just pulled up my shirt and showed her my scars. and she went,
that'll make her quiet. I'll bet.
Well, they took out a lung. I can't walk that far, but I can ride a motorcycle because at 60 mile an hour, you know how much wind is being forced down my throat.
That's
and nose.
That's right. Yeah, you breathe quite well at 60. I know that, Rich.
Yeah. All right, you guys have a good evening. And
all right.
Man, I love your show. Like, I texted in last night. Last night was one of them bad nights I was having.
Uh-huh.
And you guys just kind of brought me out of it with just the guest you had last night, and tonight's good, too.
Oh, thank you so much, Trucker Rich. That was Param Parasaran, and he was unbelievable and diabolic. For those who missed last night's show, you can find the podcast on WGNRadio.com. Param has written a book called Perfect Pain, and it really, even just being in studio, he helped me kind of think about my life and where I, you know, where I should be. I thought he was really so well-spoken and candid about mental health. Don't you think, Trucker Rich?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's when he talked about the pain and how it's you reach a point where is it worth it? You know?
Yeah.
I think all of us have been there at one point or another, you know, and it's just it was kind of nice to know that there's somebody out there that also felt like that and did not do that. You know what I mean?
Right. How many lines are you going to cross before you realize, you know, I've got to get some help?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just, you know, that's, you got a great show. I love it in the middle of the night, and you bring light to the darkness.
Oh,
put it that way.
Thank you so much, Trucker Rich. Be safe out there, all right? We'll talk to you again. Right. And by the way, I think Dingman for sure next week. I'm not going to let you down, I promise. I just got an email from him.
Okay.
But he's
all right,
busy.
I'll call and just say hi, because he was a big part of my coming out of the darkness, too. Yeah. It was amazing.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm going to work on it. I know he's been traveling, but we'll get him on. Thanks, Trucker Rich. The 708's Patty says, Patty, I'm so tired of living in a world of disrespect, disregard, and a lack of common courtesy for others. I know. And I'm starting to, like, you know, you get to this point again, you sort of, you absorb so many moments of outrage, right? And then it comes out in ways that you have trouble managing. So I understand and I agree. And you have to find that strength to find, you know, why is somebody else being disrespectful? What has led them to that point, right? We all have our stories to tell. And
yeah, I get what you're saying, and what you were talking about earlier about trying to be more empathetic. Right, a change starts with yourself.
Right.
It is getting harder and harder, you know, and some of the stuff that we experience when we put on that little candidates forum where you're getting attacked because... I'm not going to go into the whole story, but you know, like it seems that this with the advent of social media, attacking is the way that people communicate anymore. It's much much less of a civil discourse, and so it, like you said, it's easier to feel that rage, and it's harder to be empathetic. So it's a good goal.
Yeah, and one of the things that we talked about with Param too is you know, sometimes it's from within too, right? So can you take a step back and what's hard is to say you're never going to get. Here's the thing that's really hard to accept. You're never going to get someone to behave the way you want them to. And that's hard to reconcile.
Right.
You're never going to get everyone to be nicer. You're never going to, I mean, that doesn't mean that there aren't nice people. There are. You know what? Latch onto the nice people. But if you find yourself in a situation where it feels like you can't manage it anymore, you know, find a way to step back. And we've all been there. We've all made mistakes. And that means, and that can be someplace you get trapped too, is thinking, well, I made a mistake and living in regret.
Yeah.
You know, you have to, you know, take every aspect of what you've done, all your choices, and go, okay, now what can I do? And a good friend of mine who I mentioned, my friend Diana Limo, who was the one who had the heart clot, she passed away in 2001. And I have to remember something that she said to me. She said, you know what? It's not about what you've done. It's about what you're going to do. And, you know, you make mistakes. You got to pick yourself up and hope that you get forgiveness or forgive yourself and go from there. Sue has a thought. Hey, Sue, how are you doing?
Hi. Great. Thank you. Great to hear you, Patty. And thank you for your guests and the sender. I just want to say that I was always raised and felt this way, that people with disabilities or anything going on, my gosh, give them talking about spaces in the parking lots. And I just, adding on to that, when I was just about 15 years old, my sister was God bless her, has been doing well for over 30 years, had a catastrophic car accident and became a quadriplegic. And I just, like I said, I always felt this way anyway and raised this way. My gosh, give people, even if there's extra spaces available, can't we all just walk an extra 15 or 20 feet? And also, just recently, I don't know how long they've been in place, but I was just over at a Lowe's today, and they even have signs up for veterans for parking, and
oh,
there's
yes.
plenty of spaces. That's the first time I had seen that. Plenty of spaces available. But again, talking about, like you were all saying, about respect, and out of respect, it doesn't matter if no one else was there. I'm just going to park like three spaces over. I guess that's kind of...
Yeah.
That was my point. And...
I agree. Yeah, thank you, Sue. That's the thing. Just because it's empty doesn't mean it's yours. It's a great point.
Exactly.
Sue. Yeah.
Thank you. Take care.
You too, Sue. Have a great night.
Thanks.
Wonderful to hear
you
from
too.
You.
So, Patty. You know, along the lines of this accessible parking, what's your thoughts on this? And this is something I would have never considered, and that shows you my maleness, I guess. But now that I'm a father. Like, I always wonder, why aren't there special parking spots for women with small children?
Let's take a break and see what people think about that.
Yeah.
And I know there's some for pregnant moms. So 312-981-7200, parking spots for women with parents who have small children. You know, because I know Steve, had trouble with that. I definitely did. No, that car seat was so heavy. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Vic Vaughn in the newsroom. Patty Vasquez in the Studio A. How are you doing tonight, Vic?
I'm doing very well.
Did you just say snow?
A little bit. Little dusting for us.
Dusting?
Just a dusting.
I want to get my snowblower going.
I know. You're going to have to leave it in the garage for now. Unless you live south of I-80, they're expecting a little more. Maybe a couple inches. Up to three, maybe.
So you're saying just the broom is going to do it for the...
Well, let's say Skilling saying, I don't want the blame. We'll say Skilling saying, meteorologist Tom Skilling over at WGN, he's saying, just probably a dusting for us.
Oh, there you go. All right.
Nothing to worry about.
So Skilling saying it. And that's the final word around here, my friends. Thank you. Yeah. I don't want any snow. Do you want snow? Do you want snow, Vic? I don't want snow.
Well, I was just telling Jeannie, my partner, yeah, it seems like we haven't been getting much snow the last couple years.
That's good.
In Chicago, anyway. In Chicago. I know out in the suburbs, you do.
Yeah. Last year, come Christmas time, my wife asked me what I wanted for Christmas, and I told her I wanted those sorrel boots. You know,
those are great.
They're, you know, shearling lined and rubber, and then they've got the leather part on the top. I wanted a pair of boots for tromping around in the snow. I have never worn them.
But you have them, and that's the important part.
Yeah.
Do you have gear? Are you guys itching to get some of your more winter gear out, Vic? You got the winter gear that's just waiting to be used?
Yeah, I concur. I did it, actually. I bought Sorel boots, and yeah, and I haven't really used them much, maybe twice.
Yeah, mine are still, I literally took them last winter, I put them back in the box and put them up in my closet for this winter, took them down, I haven't put them on yet this winter, so I've not worn them yet.
Yeah. And you know what else? I also bought a pair of Sorel rain boots, haven't had to wear those more than a couple of times, so maybe we're onto something.
Yeah, maybe you're warding off that weather. Tom, you got any go-to winter gear that you bring into action?
I mean, I've got my Carhartt jacket. But that's kind of like my fall, winter, a little bit of spring thing.
Well, see, Tom and I were working on a podcast yesterday, and the jacket he was wearing, I was like, does your mom know that you go out in this cold weather? Like, is that jacket warm enough?
I got an extra layer of Tom to take care of the rest of it, you know.
All right.
I don't need a bunch of pasta for nothing. A carbo load.
All right. I'm just trying. I brace myself. I clench when I have to go outside in this cold weather, but you know, it's Chicago. This is what we signed up for.
That's right.
It's what we stay here for, I guess. Where, Vic, you're not from Chicago originally, right?
No, left coast.
The left coast?
Yeah. I was born in San Jose, California, and lived there until I was about 15, and then kind of moved away. My dad had one of those jobs where you move around a lot, so.
Yeah. Well, there you go. And by the way, we were talking about parking spots. I don't know how you guys feel about the idea. Representative Martwick was asking if there should be parking spots for moms who have small kids. A listener from the 815 says, parking for small children with moms, what will be the age limit? Would you need signs for different time frames of child growth? It's a bad idea. They're being very vocal about that.
Yeah, you know, and again,
just throwing it out there. Just wondering, you see moms struggling with strollers.
I do. I mean, I think about my wife who is pregnant. And
yay,
she's dealing,
congratulations.
Thank you. And dealing with a 2.5-year-old. And, you know, you get to park on the far side of the lot and you're carrying the bag and you're holding the hand of the 2.5-year-old who's trying to squirm out. I don't know. You know, like, is there, I don't know, maybe it's a bad idea, right? But again, you know, how many times have we seen and I don't mean to talk about that. Like you said, it's challenging, but I know of people who got the handicap placard because to drive their mom around.
Right.
And then when their mom's not in the car, they're like, I got the placard. I'll just throw it up there. Right. And you think to yourself, I don't know.
Well, I mean, I guess there could be, I don't know if you could get so many, the lots would have to change and then enforcement becomes an issue, right? I mean, there could be a pediatric, you know, placard for under a year or something
placard,
like that.
Right? Yeah, pediatric. That's not a bad idea. See? That could be a law.
It could be, it ought to be, we're bringing back, it ought to be a law.
Oh, yeah, why not? We could wake up, call for Kotowski now.
No, we don't do that anymore. We don't do any of that.
He doesn't sleep anyway, so it's probably.
Well, I think he sleeps more now that he's not down in Springfield trying to rack his brain over how to fix the state. That's your job now to tally on. The 773 says handicap parking spaces. What about the people who have no placard in the vehicle but flashing lights parked in handicap spots? Certain parking lots have spaces for moms with children. There are. I know that the Toys R Us used to have pregnant mom and moms with babies.
I've been to like a Target before, I think, that has had it. It's not every Target, but some of them.
Usually you will find around some stores for Ross. Oh, yeah. Ross stores, I think, do have them. Like the one up in Skokie, I think, has that as well. And by the way, the 301 says we're supposed to be getting some snow here in Maryland this weekend. So apparently parts of the country are getting some snow tonight.
I saw some news story that it's literally going to be from Denver to New York City. There's going to be this huge band of snow all the way across the country.
But we're only getting a dusting, according to Tom Skilling and our very own Vic Vaughn.
That's right.
We'll see what happens. And the thing about people just sitting in a spot with their hazards flashing, again, you know, I mentioned this earlier, then you are forcing the people who legitimately need the spot to have to, it's, you know, why put them in that position of like, hey, I need to park here now just because you're waiting.
No, put your flashers on somewhere else.
The 847 is very adamant about not having any parking spots for parents with small kids.
Oh, okay.
The 847 says, I'm sorry, but the decision to procreate doesn't entitle you to better parking spots. Fair? All right. This is all about sharing your opinions, giving each other space to exist and I understand that parenthood is tough, but deciding to have a child should not equal special treatment. So that would be probably the sort of resistance you would feel should you bring legislation.
I imagine it would be, yes.
Yeah. The 217 says I park at least one half the length of the store to my car door away. Oh, for walking, for exercise.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. That's another thing, too. Park farther away if you can. It's not a big deal to you. It's, park farther away and walk a little bit. That's what I've been doing. Here I park so that I have to use some stairs. I'm not in shape to do the stair climb again. I don't know how I'm going to be ready in March.
March.
I know. It's coming up. It's coming up pretty soon.
Wow.
301 says, I try and help in any way that I can when I see a struggling mom with children. See? Everyone's got a different
approach.
That's nice. 847-301, coming from different points of view. And yet, here we all are, just hanging out on WGN Radio. Hey, 815. Hey, Timothy. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good. I have a comment. One of them is I just learned this year that you can transfer your placard from one vehicle to another as long as you have one.
Yes.
I have two vehicles, and I wanted to get a placard for it. And then they said, oh, no, we don't do it to your license plate. We just do it, you know, to your name or whatever, so it would be good. But the other hand is that they do it to your name. My wife needs a placard.
Right.
And when I'm driving her around, I can use it, but if I'm driving to the store by myself and I use it and they come out and say, hey, who are you, whatever, even though my name's on the car, the placard is not issued to me and she is nowhere around to be, you know, coming to the car or I'm picking her up or anything, I could get a fine.
Yes, that's true. I mean, that's the same for us. If Declan's not in the car, we don't use the handicap placard or park in the handicap spots. Yeah,
and that's good of you not to. My guess is that especially in a city like Chicago where, you know, there's people doing a lot of things that the police say we've got bigger things to do. I just can't imagine that they're going to check the name on a placard to see if that you know what I mean. So I know that there is abuse on that. I'm glad that you guys aren't doing it. I think that's great.
Timothy, do you sometimes want to bring your wife with you and you know you got to get in and out? You're like, hey, honey, I want to be able to use the handicap placard.
Well, no, actually, there's times like I think Trucker Rich said where you can actually walk closer. They have the handicaps, but they have them sometimes farther away from the door than when it's, you know. I mean, it's real hard for me to walk also. When I go to Walmart, I use the cart, and my wife will use the whatchamacallit, the shopping cart to go with it. It's hard for me to walk, but that placard's not in my name. So if right. I came out and, like, somebody looked at me and said, what the hell is that guy doing?
Yeah.
Then they're going to sit there and say, you know, hey, who are you, whatever. You know, I mean, I just don't do it because I'm able to at least get to, like, say, Walmart and use the cart, or I'll use a cart to try to stable myself. But, yeah, I don't do it unless she's with me. And then most times out of ten, if she's with me and she's going in by herself or something, yeah. I actually don't even use it then. I'll drop her off, and then I'll come pick her up.
Yeah, and that's the way we do it with our family, too, is as long as Declan's in the car and we're taking care of him. Timothy, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts on this.
Well, thank you. Have a good night.
Have a good night. We'll talk to you again soon. From Arkansas, 501. Evening, y'all. In Arkansas, we have the disabled symbol on our license plate and the hang tag number, so they must match. And Timothy's right. Like with our cars, you can transfer as long as the plates, you know, you register, you know, how many vehicles you might be switching it from. So we have a small car and then we have the minivan, depending on, you know, whether or not we're all going to be in the car or where we need to go.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Before we go to the break, how old is Bobby now?
He's 2 years and 4 months.
So Tom had pulled this story for me, and this is about, you know, if your child comes home. Did you ever get an F in school on anything?
Me?
Yeah.
Yes.
You did?
Yeah.
How did your parents react?
Not good.
Oh, boy.
They weren't happy.
Wait, can I ask what it was in?
It's
okay.
Don't remember.
Tom, did you ever get an F?
Never got an F, but I came from a house where... I don't know. Like, a C was kind of a big deal. Like, that was like, why? Like, if I got a C, that was bad. That was really bad.
Yeah, no, for me, I remember I got a D in my freshman year of college in economics because, you know why? They blended micro with macro, and all I wanted was mac and cheese. And it was very confusing to me. I didn't understand what was happening. Supply and demand, guns and butter, what was happening? It was too much. And I got a D. I had all A's and one D. And my mom goes, well, if you are... happy with that, I guess it's okay. And yes, thank you. Okay, Tom, can we? My mom will be listening to this in the next 12 hours or whenever she gets up and listens to the podcast. Thank you. Right, it's that sound of disappointment. I would have almost rather she get mad at me, or you know, ask, you know, I don't know, or ask what, you know, what happened. Were you struggling? We could have had a conversation, something, but no. Well. If you are happy with that.
Seriously, though, it's like I grew up in a pretty, you know, relatively Catholic household. And that guilt, the guilt's really what gets you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And my mom would be like, oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You know, if that's what you want to be, you know, if you want to be a C student, you can be a C student.
Yeah.
That's fine.
The disappointment, that sound of disappointment. Now, were your parents, was their rage representative?
No. My parents were very good at the disappointment. Very good at the disappointment. Yes. The guilt was what got you.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Put you on the straight and narrow.
Well, and this writer says, your kid comes home with his first F. How do you talk to them without making them feel like a failure? And consult with your child in a respectful, I love this. Who consults with their child? I mean, this is a little bit, but I get it. I get where they're coming from, right? Mm-hmm. If you start with outrage, the child will respond with defensiveness and lies, right? Try to come up with excuses and things like that. Say to your child, hey, buddy, you always take good care of business. What do you think led to this? Which, you know, is true in kindergarten and true in college and true at work and beyond and beyond and beyond.
Well, it seems to me like when I was reading the response, it's one of those things where you don't have to pretend to be your kid's best friend.
Right.
But like, you know, I think it's really helpful. It was helpful in my upbringing. Don't treat your kids like they're stupid because they're not. Kids are pretty clever. They can be very, very, you know, quick on the uptake. So just, you know, talk to them like this is ostensibly their job. You're giving them a sort of like job review. You're HR. And they're like, all right, so this wasn't great. You know, what do you think got you to this point? You know, were you playing too much Xbox? Were you playing a little bit too much Xbox? And then you can, you know, just don't treat them like they're dumb. They can figure it out. They know they messed up.
Right. And again, don't immediately start calling for the best tutor in town, right?
No.
Do not act as though F stands for future destroyed. see how your child is feeling. You know, also say, is this something you maybe should have told me about earlier, right? Were you struggling throughout, you know? And like Griffin is now 15, and I have a very strange situation, unique. I was talking to someone earlier today, Rep and Tom, I had this image of the mom that I wanted to be. Well, first of all, I was a stand-up comic. I am a stand-up comic. I was going out to Los Angeles, having all kinds of meetings, doing one-woman shows. All my shows were centered around being a mom. It was Lipstick Mom and Tales of a Diaper Diva, Mamacita, all these different things. And Tom and I were laughing. I wanted to do this story about these mom bloggers whose kids are now of age to read all these things that these moms blogged about, and these moms aren't backing down. A lot of it was, you know, a little bit disparaging or griping about motherhood and all the, you know, mine was kind of like the ridiculous situations I find myself in, because I often do. But I wanted to be this sitcom star who had everything. I was, you know, this great mom. And, you know, and then I had Griffin, and that was still the plan. You know, eventually I did sell my story rights to ABC Studios, and we started developing a series. On the other hand, I also had Declan, who was born medically fragile. And that presented a new sort of landscape for me. And what was that going to mean? Could we move to Los Angeles? Do we raise him here? We wanted to stay close to our family. And ultimately, I've become, rather than being the mom I wanted to be, I've become the mom I need to be for my kids. And that's really hard to sort of reconcile, to get to that point. Anybody, and it doesn't matter if your child has special needs, or if your kid is struggling in school, or your kid's a rock star, right? All those different places, you have to find that place of like, what, you know, I've accomplished something. Because I think the hardest thing for me as being a mom is to go, you know what? I'm doing a good job. You have to say that to yourself sometimes. Don't you find like you're in the thick of things? And that's not just as being a parent. Like whatever you're doing, tell yourself you are doing a good job, because that'll get away from you and you'll forget.
That's good advice. And it's advice I need to take to heart, because it's challenging for me. I'd like to quit my job and spend all my time with my son, because I love him so much. But, you know, you have to, finding that balance is something that I just never feel like I do a good enough job at. My wife seems to think I do, but I always wish that there was more. And so it's hard not to feel like a failure. You know?
And part of doing a good job, though, because we have this idea of like, is it more time? Is it having more money? Is it taking them on trips? Is it them getting good grades? Is it, you know, all those different things? But being your best self is also doing a good job, being right. The best person you are. And then that means that you're a good father, you know, that you're doing, you know, you're being that example. I mean, that's something that I had to come to terms with, was, you know, doing what I am passionate about is also important for them to be this, you know, someone to also aspire to, you know, that my parents, you know, followed their passions or worked really hard at what they did. And that's part of what makes you a great dad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Aww.
Well,
you don't, I feel like you're not hearing it.
No, I hear it. I just, it's difficult. You know, like
I know.
You said, it's, there's such a desire to be, you know, like you said, everyone wants to be the best.
Yeah, and right? I make
you just
mistakes.
Have to be your best self. Yeah.
I make mistakes, and I'm really lucky to have a good team at home. And that's my mom downstairs. We live with my mom. She owns the building that we live in. My husband, who is the most patient, gracious, and gentle human being. And my boys, who make me want to be a better person every single day. And that's the listeners, awesome. Too, by the way, you're part of my team. And I know, you know, I try not to let you down, but, you know, sometimes we get hiccups and we just keep trying. Thank you, 708. That's very nice of you. More in a moment on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. Tell me something good. No matter what happens in your life during the day, there's always something you can be grateful for. It doesn't have to be anything grand. It can be something just, you know, something that just makes you smile. Could be your Sorel boots. I don't know, but you don't need them yet, so it can't be your boots yet. It's
no.
Representative.
Mm-hmm.
One of my something good is some of the texts that are coming in, and very nice. By the way, in regards to thoughts on when your child brings home an F, be a counselor and friend. Just tell them they have it inside them to do more. And a parent says, when my kids were young, I bribed them to get good grades. $5 for A's, $4 for B's. And progressively, the lower the grade, the lesser the money. Now my daughter is a nurse and makes a hell of a lot more money than I do. And my son is a graduate at University in is it University in Washington D.C. learning how to do sign language, which is wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that, and thank you 301 for your kind words. I appreciate that. The 301 says, I would have liked to have chosen a different career path, but I chose practicality and stability in order to provide for my wife and three children. I pursued my passion as a hobby and said yes, that too. And that's another way to, you know, be a good example for your kids. So that's a great point, 301. And my something good is having you in studio. It's been a while since we've been hanging out like this. And congratulations on the inauguration day and your fourth term as representative of the 19th district.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's thank you for me being the something good today. That makes me feel great. It's great to be here. It really is. It's great to be back on the show. I always have a great time here.
And tell me something good.
You know, I was just telling you before the break at inauguration, it seems to be a trend these days that people wear something to signify something. So in my inauguration, I wore my socks were American flags because I'm grounded in democracy. I want to make sure I remember that I'm always grounded in the belief that our system of democracy is great. I wore my blue tie because I'm a Democrat and that means something to me. But I wore a purple a pocket square, and that was in honor of two of my friends, really, but mostly Steve Anderson, who is not a representative anymore, but he was him and David Harris were a big movers in breaking that record budget impasse and putting the state back on good footing. And I wore that not knowing that I was going to bump into Steve right before the inauguration. And, you know, it was hard to be going to step on the stage and get sworn in, and there was Steve was going to go sit in the audience.
Right.
And part of
the reason that he's sitting in the audience is because he helped broker that deal.
That's right.
To break the budget impasse.
Yeah, and so I told him that I'd worn that in his honor, and he was moved, and it was a very good moment, sharing a very personal moment with a very good friend, and I enjoyed
that.
That's
sweet. Yeah. That's great to hear. Tom, tell me something good.
Something good today. Actually, right before I came into the show, I watched a great movie called If Beale Street Could Talk. Based on the James Baldwin novel, directed by Academy Award winning director Barry Jenkins. He did Moonlight. This one I really enjoyed. Not as much as Moonlight, but Moonlight was really just a feast for the eyes. This is still really good, though. Definitely worth your time, especially if you really want to get into conversations about prison and race and how the black community kind of has dealt with those things in the past. It takes place in the mid-20th century, so it's a good look at a time period and a great adaptation by a book by a great author.
And I know that it did very well at the Golden Globes, and of course people talking about Academy Award nominations.
Regina King won the Golden Globe for her role as the mother of a pregnant woman, and she's really fantastic.
That sounds like it's a great movie. We also got a text earlier, by the way, from someone who was on their way home from the Music Box Theater because they had seen Roma. And apparently the only way to see it is on the big screen.
Yeah, 70mm. It's the format of Kings.
By the way, I was the 630 said it's Gallaudet. I don't know if I'm saying it right, but Gallaudet University. It's the only university in the nation taught by deaf people. I was not familiar. Quick break, and then we'll turn it over to Nick D. 720 WGN. Thank you to all of our guests tonight. I want to thank Jarell, Javier, of course Scott Stantis, Representative Martwick, and John Nichols. Great job tonight, Tom. It was wonderful working with you. And of course, Nick D. is up next.